First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell?
Yes.
Hi, this is Sue, and I'm going to try to say this right. I've heard you're the listeners. I'm calling on 1240 AM News Talk WJIM, Lansing, Michigan.
That is the exact proper way to do it. Good for you.
Okay, well, I'm a 10th time listener and a first time caller.
All right.
And I wanted to comment on something I heard the first night that you were talking about, just kind of a perspective that I don't know that you even accept this kind of thought, but you were talking about Mount St. Helens looking like it's going to start rumbling again and what is going on with the volcanoes around the world.
Mount St. Helens is rumbling again.
Okay. Well, I just had four little scriptures that I wanted to read that might give a kind of a perspective to think about.
Yeah, I would prefer you do not.
No?
If you would like to paraphrase them, you're welcome to.
Okay, well, basically, the last one is the part, it's Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem.
Yes.
The crowd is basically saying, blessed be the Lord, and the Pharisees are saying, Jesus, rebuke your disciples.
Yes.
And he says, I tell you that if these should hold their peace, the stones would immediately cry out. And I'm thinking, how would a stone cry out?
That's how a stone would cry out. That is one of the ways. The other way is to say, I've been building up a lot of pressure between my fellow stone over here, and I think I'm going to slip.
Yeah.
That's called an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you very much for the call, and take care. These stones will cry out. Check this out. Thousands of workers in Moscow continued on Tuesday to repair damaged buildings and clear away trees uprooted by a freak storm on Sunday. A spokesperson for the Moscow mayor said, listen to this, 8 people died in the early Sunday storm that ripped metal roofing off buildings, sent billboards flying down boulevards, and snapped thousands of trees like toothpicks. This is Moscow, folks. The first deputy mayor there said, the storm resulted in losses of 1 billion rubles, or about $160 million. 160 people were injured in the storm. It downed 2,500 electric poles. This is from Moscow, folks. I got diverted there. And you consider what the weather ought to be now in Moscow. It ought not be this, believe me. They called it a hurricane. It would appear the jet stream touched down in Moscow. Ta-da. Oh, there you are. Now, absolutely fresh flowers. If it's Sean David Morton. Sean David Morton. As I said earlier, this guy has had more hits than the Russian mafia. He is a prophet. He is a writer and a producer for TV and film. He worked with Gene Roddenberry in the early 80s, redeveloped Star Trek for TV and film, one of the original creator producers for the show Strange Universe. I was on that one, too. Have written, produced, and consulted for Unsolved Mysteries, Sightings, Now It Can Be Told, Encounters, and currently for Hard Copy. His books include The Gulf Breeze Prophecies, The Millennium Factor, The Delphi Chronicles, and now finishing Area 51 Nightmares in Dreamland, being published by M. Evans and will be in the stores this Christmas. He publishes the International Monthly Delphi Associates newsletter. I have a copy here. He studied at Stanford in the summer of 1976. Where he was part of Dr. Russell Tard's original experiments on remote viewing. Graduated from USC with degrees in political science, fine arts, and organic chemistry. Studied theology at the Rock Church, I believe it is, in Houston, Texas. Lived as an initiated monk at a monastery in Nepal, where he studied with the Black Hat sect. It was there that he learned meditative techniques that enhanced his own abilities, that allowed him to get in tune with the earth, read maps, predict geologic events, and taught him to travel into past lives and future incarnations, astrally traveling the time stream. Here is Sean David Morton. Sean, welcome to the program. Welcome back, actually.
Thank you so much. It's It's really nice to be back. I feel like I've just been off the show for too long since we did it in January. But, you know, we saw each other on the Alaskan boat cruise.
That's right.
So that was, and that was great fun and a great time to be able to sit down with so many august writers like Graham Hancock and John Anthony West. And it was great fun to actually sit down and spend some time with Zahi Hawass. And I'm just sorry when you got to the boat that you were so beat up. I feel like they were so mean to you. You were working the night before and had to wait in the airport for so long before you... Where you came to the boat.
I'm used to that. Actually, Sean, over the last 6 or 7 years, now that I think about it, I have never had a personal vacation. I've always had, you know, trips like that where I work and then I get off the air in the morning and take off for a few thousand miles and or to cruises where I have, you know, 500 listeners or so with me.
Yes.
As this first real getaway vacation that I've had in recent memory... So I'm looking forward to it. I'm off to Paris tomorrow.
You certainly deserve it. I think you work too hard as it is, so you have fun when you're out there.
Well, I have fun when I work. That's how I can do it. But it is going to be fun. Really is. Anyway, you're back here because you had so damn many hits. I mean, just about everything that you predicted in January has come to pass, and we might well review some of what you did predict then. So why don't you review some of that for us?
Okay. Well, I had it all written down there for you. There.
You know what? That by the way, you sent me the various points that you thought we ought to cover.
Right.
Once again, that same page did not come through.
Oh, it didn't.
No.
All right. Well.
Now, so I have some of the things we can cover, but I'm missing some of the middle section. So I'll depend on you to. Help out with that.
Okay, well, I'll just ramble then. It's usually a free train of thought stream is usually how we work best.
Why don't we start at the top? You say here a precise charting of what is going to happen to Bill Clinton during and after his presidency.
Well, it's a, that was one of the biggest hits that we had probably when I was on the show. It was December 28th of 97 when we were talking about the upcoming things that were going on for the year.
Yes.
And that was also, I was on hard copy as well when that sort of hit the national news because I had been talking, you and I were talking about the fact that I predicted that the Paula Jones case would be dismissed or that she would actually lose the case, which is exactly what happened.
That's correct.
That there would be five more women that would be coming up on Clinton with more sexual allegations. I think there were six, but I originally had predicted five of them. Quite specifically, and of course that they would be calling for his impeachment very, very soon, and the third week in January, this all began to happen.
That's correct.
So let's just start with, we might as well just start with Clinton here.
Well, sure. In other words, you predicted all of that. It came to pass. Now what do you see ahead for Bill Clinton?
Well, this is what I think is going on. First off, he's leaving for China, I believe, is it this weekend?
I believe yes,
okay.
or even prior to the weekend, and of course he will have his little reception in Tiananmen Square.
I think that's rather fitting, don't you?
Well, it depends on which way you look at it.
Yeah, it's just also sad. He is choosing right now, and of course the way I prepare for these programs with you is that I get on the phone and I talk to everybody that's sort of on staff here that so lovingly contributes to putting out the Delphi Associates newsletter. I call with my own impressions. I call people who I feel are absolute experts in their field. People like Stacey Dean, who's an amazing astrologer in Las Vegas. Robert Egan, who we jokingly call Nostrababus, who does his Nostradamus quatrains down in San Diego.
Right.
Serena Wright, Stacey Stevens, you know, a whole group of people. Because I have a vision or an idea of what's going on, and then I bounce that idea, and then I act as a filter to then facilitate what I see going on. Everything that Clinton is going to try to accomplish, and it's very interesting, because with what's going on with Clinton's career right now, and we said this back in December, and we said it again in January, that Clinton was going to be like a man falling off a cliff, that he was going to, that the stress was eventually going to get to him, and one of the most... interesting photographs was, I think, him on the cover of Newsweek magazine with making this horrifically strained face, where actually the article was about, you know, will the stress get to him or as the tension mounts on Clinton. And
have you noticed, Sean, that In recent photographs of Bill Clinton, when he is not sitting in the Oval Office with makeup, his face is really blotchy, and he really looks like he's going through terrible stress.
Well, his health is going to go. I mean, the major predictions that I'd made initially all the way back in 1992, when I predicted his election, and I predicted that Ross Perot would re-enter the presidential race, that Perot would get 22% of the vote, that Clinton would win with approximately 42% of the vote. And this was when I wrote the Millennium Factor in September of 92, that I predicted that he would not finish out his presidency. And it's very interesting because a number of unusual points are ganging up on him. And just to review as to what's happening, we have never in the history of the Republic ever had a president who has been inaugurated on what is called a void of course moon ever finish his term of office. Now, a void of course moon is when the moon leaves the major aspects of one sign, it has a period of time, sometimes minutes, but sometimes several hours, where it's sort of floating free, so to speak, where it's not aspected to any other sign,
right.
And then it moves into the aspects of the next sign.
Right.
At exactly 12 noon on January 22nd, which is when his inauguration was, he had the exact same aspects when he took the inauguration as Nixon did in 1973 and as Kennedy did in 1961. Now, once again, we have never in the history of the Republic ever had a president survive what's called a void of course moon. In other words, finish out his term of office.
When you say survival, you mean political survival.
Political survival, yeah. He's not going to be killed. It's not an assassination. He doesn't have any of the hard aspects in his chart, all the Eighth House stuff that somebody like Kennedy had, who had death written all over him. It's going to be political embarrassment. It's going to be, I believe, his resignation simply because of health problems.
Now, all right, hold that thought. Listen, okay. We're coming up on a break. Did you have an opportunity to view the photographs that I just got up on the website?
Yeah, I did. I saw them this afternoon. They were the ones with the contrails, right?
Yeah.
They were amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That's what I reacted to. Even if you had not seen what I saw, believe me, folks, when I tell you, these pictures taken, obviously, a second or so apart are astounding. If any of you can figure out a way to explain them to me, and I'm sure you will try, be my guest. But they're some of the best I've seen. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast to Sean David Morton, the guy with more hits than the Russian mafia. I don't know if that's the way I had a promo you or not. Probably not.
It sounds pretty sinister.
But the people who understand prophecy, they know what I'm talking about.
All right, indeed. Yeah, they do understand it. Although it's,
I'll come up with something else.
I just have to laugh at all this Viagra stuff that's going on.
Well, it is true. You cannot turn on the TV without seeing a story on Viagra and somebody holding their hand out with a little blue Viagra pill.
Yeah. Well, all these drugs and all these medicines to help you maintain an erection and keep an erection. Now, Art, if they could find something to help you give it away, I think that they'd be honest.
I am trying to avoid all Viagra jokes, somewhat unsuccessfully. Anyway,
speaking of Viagra, on back to Bill Clinton, shall we? A man who has no problems with that in that department.
Well, maybe he's been using it and it should be taken away.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, you think that he will have health problems and not finish out his term?
Yes. Well, actually, when you talk about health, you're also talking about political health along with physical health, which I think is you're about to see right now. Now, first off, his trip to China is going to be a complete disaster. The only reason that he's going to China in the first place is there are some pretty major money transactions that are going to happen while he's over there. He's also going to try to beg the Chinese to not devalue their own currency,
mm-hmm.
because the Chinese are quite literally perched on the brink of being able to take over virtually the entire Asian economy.
That's correct.
Or send it into a further tailspin, because we're trying to dump so much money into Japan's economy, which will not work, by the way, no matter how much money we pour into Japan. It's not getting to where it needs to go. Japan is going to default. It is going to collapse. It was one of my major predictions all the way back in 1994 when I actually toured Japan and told them that Japan was going to fall into a sea of economic problems and economic chaos.
When you told the Japanese that, how did they react?
Well, it was at the same time. I was actually in Osaka at the time, and it was in the spring of 1994. When I was also warning them, I was on the national news in Japan because I had predicted that President Hosokawa would be out of office within 60 days. Mm-hmm. It was actually within 30 days he was out, and I was talking about how the economy in Japan was going to collapse, and I was talking about how there was going to be a major earthquake in Osaka. And of course, that happened exactly 1 year to the day after the Northridge quake.
That's correct.
Which goes along with my theory of how the various shocker points of the planet, that there are six major shocker points of the planet, being Lhasa, Tibet is the base root chakra, Cairo, Egypt is the prostate ovarian chakra, Stonehenge, England is the solar plexus, Machu Picchu is the heart chakra, Los Angeles is the throat chakra, and Osaka, Japan is the third eye chakra of the planet. And as each one of these planetary chakra activates through earthquake activity, I think that it's bringing the planet up to the very next level of what's about to happen. So with Clinton over in China, he could not have picked a worse time to be over there. Nothing he is going to try to accomplish over in China is going to work.
Well, I want to say something. I went to China. I went up to Red China, up to Canton in Red China. And in all my life, Sean, I have never seen anything as frightening as what I saw in China. I saw commerce at a level that we have not even dreamed of. I mean, it was scary. It was really scary. And there was no way to come out of China without the impression that these people are going to bury us economically.
Yes.
And in the not very distant future. So I'm of two minds politically with China. On the one hand, we have got to keep communication lines open with China.
Yes.
Either we join them or they're going to run us over like a bug in the street. However, the president going to Tiananmen Square is a very, very, very poor choice.
Yes. It's, and nothing he does over there is going to work out. And it's, as I said, it has to do with money transfers. It has to do with trying to get the Chinese to keep their currency stable because they're the only people in the region. Actually, they have not taken advantage of the Japanese crisis or the Asian crisis, surprisingly enough.
And no, they've been on the verge of devaluation. They've been talking a lot about it. You think they will do it?
Well, that's what he's trying to go over there to convince them not to do. Because if they devalue the currency there, then most of Asia will sink even further than it has. And that's the primary purpose of his trip, that there's going to be a very, very substantial trade in technology, military technology specifically. Of course, we've been supplying them with everything from low-ground missiles to guidance systems to one of the most horrific things that we did was we gave them the entire U.S. patent database, including patents that were pending. We shipped it to them, the entire CD-ROM library of all of the patents in the U.S. Patent Office with everything pending about 2 years or so ago. And I believe that there has been a very specific program by the United States, and of course everything that we give to the Israelis sell almost directly to the Chinese, and the Chinese give to the Pakistanis, which is one of the reasons why their missile program, and hopefully we'll talk about that later in the program, why their missile program and their nuclear tests have advanced by leaps and bounds.
Why, Sean, do you think the president is choosing to do such a politically stupid thing and go to the very spot where democracy was crushed? Why would he do that?
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, there are obviously people around him that know that this is not an auspicious time for him to be going to China.
Well, Hillary ought to know better than that.
One would think, but it's just that, I'm telling you, everything he's going to do over there is going to go wrong. It is going to be the biggest fiasco. It may be covered up quite conceivably in the Western media, but I think in Asia and the rest of the world, Clinton is just going to take a drubbing. He's never been good at foreign affairs.
Yeah, everybody, listen to shortwave. You want to know what's really going on, listen to shortwave, listen to the BBC, listen to Moscow, listen to the world, and you'll know what's going on, because in our media, in this country, we live in our own spin. We really live in our own spin, Sean.
Well, people don't realize that there are, and of course you realize this probably more than anybody, that the 25,000 forms of communication in the United States, those being books and newspapers and magazines and radio stations and TV stations, they're all owned by, what would you say, 30 guys? 20? 10?
Maybe 30.
Maybe? I would say about 30.
Many, yeah.
And they control most of what's heard in the American press and the American media. It's not quite as controlled because of the independent control over a lot of the media outlets in the rest of the world.
I often wonder, Sean, how I'm able to do what I do. I'm owned by one of the largest broadcasting corporations in the world. you know.
It has a lot to do with, you know, these guys are, they know what the people want, and I think that they, you've been very, very successful doing what you do, and you know, I'm surprised they haven't put more restraints on what it is you're doing, but...
me too.
You've been... But
they can't.
Certainly nothing's changed about your show that I've seen, over, you know, since I've been on
your
show.
No, it hasn't. Nothing has changed.
From 1992 on, I know there were a lot of people saying, oh, my God, art's getting up, bought up by some big corporation,
yeah,
and it's going to change, and... That hasn't happened at all. As a matter of fact, I think you've just gotten better since
you've gotten the corporation. The first clause in my contract, and I said this on the air before, I'm probably not supposed to talk about it, but believe me, with regard to creative control,
right,
I've got it.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's wonderful.
I couldn't live without it. I mean, it was the first thing. You know, so that's right. But the rest of the media... I do see them, and I watch them all, Sean, and they operate the same way. They all report virtually the same thing. And if things go wrong in China, you're right.
Yeah,
we're not going to hear about it.
We may or may not hear about the Spinner take on it here.
Yeah.
But as I said, I have always said, and I said this on your show in January. I said it in December, on December 28th show. I got up on hard copy and said it. And I don't know how I can say it more. I have said from the beginning that the whole Zippergate bimbo thing, it is just a smokescreen for the truth.
Yep.
I think the Monica Lewinsky thing came from the original leak to Paula Tripp about Monica Lewinsky actually came from Al Gore's office. And I think the Monica Lewinsky thing and everything else is just a gigantic smokescreen to cover up everything else. If they're going to hang Clinton, they want to hang him on the sexual picadillos because they do not want to get into all the other stuff that he's involved with.
I don't think they can hang him on that.
Because it will, and they won't. And I said on your show in December, January, and on hard copy, that it will not be the bimbos and the Zippergate and any of that stuff that's going to get him, that it was going to be China. And I kept saying from the beginning it was going to be China, 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 and now they're talking on CNBC and most of the local radio stations and the cable news stations about the fact that China has given them, that Clinton has given them missile technology, that he's given them satellite technology. You know, of course, he's so ridiculous that these other media people get up and say, well, the Republicans haven't done anything about campaign finance reform. And this one moderator on the program said, well, yes, but there's a huge difference between campaign finance reform and giving a communist enemy the technology to point nuclear weapons at you.
Well, and if they then combine that and are able to combine that with the possibly very illegal campaign contributions, then, of course, that ties it up.
Well, here's where it begins. I mean, it begins with the China trip. I also said that he had to go to China because he is literally mirroring or mimicking. I mean, notice the frightening parallels that are going on between Clinton and what happened with Nixon.
Right.
Everything from, remember we were talking about the airplanes a while back, about how there was a confusion with the airplanes and he had to, Air Force One wasn't working, and so he had to fly out of Washington, D.C. on the same airplane that Nixon used when he resigned.
Right.
And that plane then broke down in Dallas, and he had to fly back to Washington, D.C. on the same plane that brought Kennedy's body back.
I recall.
And then the... And Nixon's political fortunes, I think, very much changed inside the media and inside his own advisors after his China trip. And I think that the same thing is going to happen with Clinton. It's going to start the beginning of the crux point of what's going to happen with him. And I believe that this is probably when indictments are going to be handed down or when major witnesses and major embarrassments. But this is going to happen right around his birthday, which is August 17th. It's going to be about the third week of August. And it's going to begin, and then he's got less than 1 year after that pattern. And it is my belief that, you know, and as I said, watching his demise is going to be like watching a man falling off a cliff in a Charlie Chaplin movie. He's going to hit every rock on the way down. And I believe that he will leave office. The earliest would probably be January of 99. The latest would probably be by early summer. Of 1999, but leave
you think it'll be for stated health reasons.
Stated health reasons, I think, to get him out of.
All right, constitutionally, then. So then he's gone. Constitutionally, Al Gore then assumes the presidency.
Well, here was my initial prediction about a Gore presidency. Now Gore, we also talked about last December, January, that Gore was going to turn on Clinton. and that I felt that there was going to be a schism that was going to happen between Gore and Clinton. Gore has now done this with Israeli foreign policy, and in fact, Gore is specifically distancing himself. He is hanging in the background. He is gathering political friends and political power. He has been raised since he was 5 years old to be president of the United States. It has always been his goal. He wants the job. I also think that probably the biggest probability for his vice presidential candidate, and once again, this was something I said some 4 years ago, and I actually printed in the newsletters, was that if Clinton was removed from office and Gore became president, that I saw Jay Rockefeller as the vice president of the United States. Wow. And that this would once again repeat the Nixon pattern of, it's very interesting that Ford became president and then Nelson Rockefeller became vice president under Gerald Ford. But I think that he is going to be the primary candidate as far as the vice president because of his political clout, his political power, of course, his money resources, which would then possibly allow Gore and Jay Rockefeller to run on the Democratic ticket in the year 2000. Because now it's gotten to the point of where even the Democrats want Clinton gone because they feel that Gore doesn't have a snowball's chance in Guam of winning the presidency on his own in the year 2000, but as a sitting incumbent president that he's got basically a fighting chance. The biggest shock, and as I said, this is going to start, it's going to start in August. There's going to be a whole number of new embarrassments that are going to be coming up in July. It's going to start the last week of August. There is a, astrologically, I check stress points on his chart with Stacey Dean, some people that are real experts in astrology, and there's a solar eclipse right on his natal sun, I mean, to the exact degree, which is embarrassment, change of lifestyle, basically a fall from grace and a fall from power. But at the same time, next year in March, which is Al Gore's birthday, he's changing jobs, he takes on a new lifestyle. It's literally, he's elevated upwards into the next level, and I think it's going to have to do with the presidency. And once again, it's going to have to do with China. It's going to have to do with the political contributions, the military contributions. I mean, when you have people on CNBC screaming treason, that these are treasonable offenses, the type of things that Clinton has done and the type of weapons that he's given China. And I have contended from the very beginning, and a lot of it's in the newsletter that I faxed you today, that the last great war that we are going to fight, the United States is going to fight, is going to be against China. Now, it's not going to be for quite some time. It's going to be another probably 15 to 20 years, and that the communist system in China will collapse, and in a lot of ways it already has. But that China becoming a free nation state does not make them any less dangerous. It makes them more dangerous, because they are going to want everything that we have here in the United States.
Of course.
And you know, and so that's why we fight this last war with the Chinese, and why we've been mollifying them. But I mean, we're literally selling them the rocks with which they will stone us. And from a future viewpoint of things that I've seen of events coming in the future, our current China policy is just—it's insanity. I mean,
is no way, is there, for Al Gore to escape the same terrible taint that picture that you're painting about the president.
No, and
he may try to distance himself from it.
Well,
he's
trying to do it now, and as I said, he is trying to. He and the Congress actually have divided themselves over Clinton's foreign policy, making separate decisions and separate statements saying we are not with the president with what he is doing with Israel, because he wants the Oslo Peace Accords to actually work, and of course, Gingrich and Gore are very much with the hardline. The hardliners, the Yitzhak Israel Netanyahu gang, that basically want to throw the Oslo Peace Accords out the window. And of course, they are now saying that, well, we're distancing ourselves from Clinton. And actually, now that he's got the Israelis angry with him, and you've got Hillary now standing up saying, well, I think the Palestinians should have a homeland.
That was remarkable, wasn't it?
He's in a lot of trouble. I mean, you don't want to get the Israelis mad at you. They have a lot of power in the media. They've got a lot of power as far as intelligence gathering goes. I don't think it was any mistake whatsoever that on the same day that the Monica Lewinsky story broke, Clinton was sitting in the White House defending himself with Yasser Arafat sitting in the Oval Office.
I remember that.
So, that was a real tie into all of that. So that's where I think it's going to go. I think, once again, he's got a ways to go still, but everything as far as foreign policy is going to go is just going to come up and bite him in the backside, as they say. And with a Gore presidency, he's the one I think we really have to watch out for as far as
Okay, Gore would fill out the president's term.
Yes.
And then what?
It's very hard to see after that. I mean, the problem with political predictions is that it's a... I think by the year 2000, we're going to have so many problems. The biggest surprise, I feel, is going to be in the November elections, because in the November elections, you are going to see major, major upsets. You're going to see third-party candidates coming to the fore. You're going to see people who are just so fed up. People who actually believed in the Republican Revolution initially are now completely disenchanted, now that Congress has virtually done nothing for the last 2 years.
Yes.
But it's like my grandmother used to say, if voting really changed anything, they would have made it illegal a long time ago.
I pray that's what happened. There has got to come a sort of a critical mass point where the American people realize, whether they vote for Democrats or Republicans, they're going to get the same thing.
Well, my theory is that it's, you know, the Democrats want to take us to hell in a handbasket, the Republicans want to take us there in the shopping cart, but, you know, people don't realize that it's ultimately the same destination.
That's right. That's right. And there's got to be this critical mass point, and you just predicted it. And that's one of your predictions that I surely hope comes true.
It's going to be huge, and we've got all kinds of stuff to talk about tonight.
Well, I know we do. So we'll get down to it. We're going to break here at the top of the hour. My guest is Sean David Morton, and he'll be back in a moment. He's right. We've got an awful lot to talk about, an awful lot of ground to cover tonight. So I suggest that you either sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and stay with us, or click that record button, but you don't want to miss what's coming up. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast. Okay.
I just want to mention one thing, too, about the... we had some problems, I remember, when I was on in December, January, because we had, literally after those programs, we had, like, thousands of people who sent in to subscribe to the Delphi Associates newsletter, and we had some people that sort of slipped through the cracks, and I had a secretary who'd since been fired who did a number of data entries without putting in who paid for what. So a lot of people may have only gotten, a few people may have only gotten the January 98, which was the predictions for the year newsletter. So I wanted to just to address anybody that didn't get their subscription or may have had a problem with it. We've got a new 800 number now. The 800 number will actually be functioning first thing tomorrow morning. So if you could hold off on calling it until tomorrow. But the 800 number is 800-723-6962. That's 800-723-6962.
Okay.
And that's all divided up into boxes about, you call in, you'll be able to press buttons about if you want a subscription to the newsletter or back materials or videos, or if you have any sort of problem. Or if you can just drop me a note, if you haven't been getting your subscription properly, we've got your name and address in the database. Just drop us a note at PRI, which is the Prophecy Research Institute, and we're at 2207 Hermosa Avenue, H-E-R-M-O-S-A, and that is in beautiful Hermosa Beach, California, and the zip code here is 90254. So, as I said, we've got an 800 number now, 723-6962, and our address at PRI, Prophecy Research Institute, is 2207 Hermosa Avenue in Hermosa Beach, California. And for anybody that would like to subscribe to the newsletter, it's $50 for a 12-issue, one-year subscription. And, you just have to have alternative media now. I think the newsletter you put out is fantastic. People just need to realize that the revolution is not going to be televised, and that these are probably the most dangerous times, but the most exciting and, I think, wonderful times as far as times of opportunity for personal development for humanity at large. So you've got to be able to have some alternative information, such as things like the Delphi Associates newsletter or your newsletter or your talk radio show. So hopefully everybody will call in and or write in and subscribe to the newsletter, the Delphi Associates.
All right. We kind of covered Japan.
Yeah, let's just recap. We talked about Clinton. Once he's out of office, by the way, he's going to divorce Hillary. That's pretty obvious.
He will divorce Hillary,
Hillary will divorce him. He'll divorce him, pretty much get rid of him right away. I do see, if the government hangs together for that long, him actually eventually becoming a senator in Arkansas and actually becoming more dangerous as a senator than I think he will be as the president. but he will go back into political office.
You mean to tell me the people of Arkansas would elect that man again?
Just to get him out of Arkansas, just to send him back to Washington, I think they'd elect him again. But, I think they played a pretty good joke on us the first time, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And to go back, just to recap what we were talking about, some of the predictions that were made on your show that anybody can go back and check, which is why it's great, because you have, you know, you've got your website up, you've got text documents that people can check. But on the December 28, 97 show, I talked about the return of the UFO motherships over Phoenix, which happened January 14th, that there would be massive solar flare activity, which happened January 4th and January 18th. This would then lead to a record heat wave in the Southwest, which is in the process of happening now and continuing. Five more women would accuse Clinton of sexual misconduct, which occurred. The Paula Jones case would be dismissed, which I talked about on hard copy as well. New China scandals, and that it would be China that would bring Clinton down, talked about on that show. Serious call for Clinton's impeachment. Al Gore would turn on Clinton. This is now happening over Israeli foreign policy. I talked about the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, and we're going to talk hopefully a little bit about that. That's in process now. The Congress actually voted on May 14th, that actually carried by one vote in the Congress, to repeal the Glass-Steagall Act, which were the protections that were put in place after the stock market crash of 1929. And Glass-Steagall was most important because it kept the banks out of it kept the banks out of mutual funds, out of the stock market, out of insurance. And so now that the Glass-Steagall Act, and actually when we talked about the Glass-Steagall Act being repealed, I figured that Congress would have to do it first. But the front page of most of the newspapers were that the banks were going to go ahead and offer insurance and mutual funds and one-stop shopping, stocks, if you will. And they didn't care what the Congress thought. They were blatantly breaking the law. And they said to Congress, we dare you to try to stop us. And, of course, the Congress didn't. So now they're talking about completely stripping the FDIC. Alan Greenspan was up saying that the FDIC, the Federal Deposits and Insurance Corporation, now does not have enough money, that there are really no banks left in the United States that are actually owned by people in the United States, that they're all foreign banks. You know, this is Greenspan getting up on C-SPAN.
That's right.
That number two, that none of these banks, the banks were so huge now that the FDIC would not be able to cover any of them if they were to collapse. And now they have totally taken away the firewalls that protected the consumer from what was going on in the banking structure. And we talked about that there would be massive bank mergers, which, of course, was happening with Citicorp, was happening with Bank One, was happening with Bank of America. That these 10 banks were going to become 5 banks and then 3 banks and eventually 1 bank, 1 super bank, and then they'd basically have no competition whatsoever. And all the firewalls would be taken out so that you could go in and you could get your stocks and your bonds and your mutual funds and your insurance, and it would be all in the same place. So that if those banks were to collapse, we would have a depression that would certainly make 1929 to 1940 look like a Sunday school picnic.
Mm-hmm.
And we also talked about major advancements in cancer and AIDS research that would be happening about now, and that's happening now.
Oh, it sure is.
Cure for a major sexual disease. Of course, we talked about, you know, Viagra. And
that's true. Well, that's true.
I mean, it's a major sexual disease, and you know, the big joke being that if you take Viagra and extra strength Rogaine, that you get hair like Don King. Have you heard that one? That's so. Anyway, so that's what we that's what we covered in the so let's go down point by point here.
All right, good.
And we'll go back to what we're talking about. Okay, Japan. Complete financial collapse of Japan. Obviously, that's on the verge of happening. In a nutshell, what really happened with Japan is that they did the same thing that the United States did in the 1980s, where they repealed their version of the Glass-Steagall Act and allowed the Japanese versions of savings and loans over there to loan commercial real estate. And
yeah, they got a lot of bad loans sitting there.
Yeah, well, what happened was is the mob, the Japanese Yakuza, borrowed about $1 trillion from the Japanese economy and then just didn't pay it back. And that's, that's a very simplified version of what was happening. But all the bad loans primarily went to organized crime, who basically just said, hell with you, we're not paying the money back. We talked about Clinton going to China. Okay, let's get into some earth change stuff, because this was very, very... this is primarily one of the reasons why I contacted you in the first place.
Okay. I'm sure that you at least get reports about what goes on my show. I have had a long series of guests
Yes.
that are predicting, including Hopi elders, including at Danzig. Oh, God, I don't even want to list them all right now.
Right.
But they have been saying, watch July.
Right.
July is going to begin a chain of events, and July is next week.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you make out of that?
Allow me to be contrary.
That's fine. Good.
Because let me say, I don't disagree with the general trend, but I disagree very much with the specifics. Part of what I've done with the newsletter, and part of one of the reasons why I started publishing the Delphi newsletter originally back in 1993, was because so many people were saying California was going to fall into the ocean, that we were going to have these gigantic quakes, that we were all going to be wiped out. And I live in California. I mean, I'm sitting here right on top of this, so I'm sensitive to the phenomenon. I know that people who are trained in certain meditative techniques can very much do meditations on the planet that act as sort of like psychic golden acupuncture needles that can actually bring much-needed positive energy to the planet that can actually change certain geological outcomes. I know it for sure. I know it for an absolute spiritual fact that the mind is the builder and that people can change certain things. Now, looking at the maps, and this is what I've been doing for most of the day, is going over the maps. Probably, and I hope we can spend almost the last half hour of the show talking about this. We obviously with the looking at the maps here with what's going on in Afghanistan with the gigantic quakes that have happened near Fazabad in the northern parts of Afghanistan, and of course the nuclear tests in Pakistan and India, which are just crazy. It's like two guys hitting themselves in the face with a shovel.
When all that happened, and particularly after the Pakistan tests, mm-hmm. and then the Afghan quake, I said, good Lord, how come nobody is talking about a correlation? I said, there has to be a correlation, or at least it's very likely there could be a correlation, and not one person, not one network, not one network anchor uttered one word. And I sat here and screeched about it.
It's just absolutely, absolutely absurd. I mean, didn't anybody ever watch the movie Superman? I mean, there was a reason why Lex Luthor was jamming nuclear bombs into fissures to create beachfront property in California. It's just the fact that they've now jammed, that the Pakistanis and the Indians have actually jammed a nuclear weapons into the fissure that makes up the Hindu Kush that then started the earthquakes in Afghanistan. I mean, the correlation is too obvious. Now, the more subtle correlation to this, Art, is that let's say you take a balloon filled with water and you poke your finger into one side of the balloon filled with water. The shockwave goes directly to the other side of the planet or literally to the other side of the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that, and this is just thumbnail, and I'm sure that you've got much greater people and much greater experts on this than I. But just on thumbnail, I know that Baghdad in Iraq is directly on the other side of the planet from Landers in Southern California, actually
right.
out by Palm Springs.
Right.
And, of course, we have the 7.6 quake out there in, I think it was June 28th of 92, which started a whole wave of seismic activity in California that has since calmed down somewhat in the last year or so and has now begun to reactivate with what's going on in Mammoth and up around Mount Whitney. So using that sort of same thumbnail thing, I'm looking at the maps. I just got a compass out today and just started working with it just a bit, but that would mean that directly on the other side of the planet from where the earthquake was in Afghanistan is approximately Omaha, Nebraska.
Omaha, Nebraska?
Yeah. And that the nuclear tests that were being performed, the ones in India, and the ones in India were on the Pokhran Range in the West Rajasthan area. It was called the Buddha site when they started blasting these things off. And people have to realize that these are not just Hiroshima, Nagasaki atomic bombs. These are hydrogen bombs.
You're absolutely correct.
Hydrogen bombs.
That fact was confirmed for me by a number of nuclear physicists. They're saying that fact has not been reported. In fact, it's been misreported. They're talking about atomic bombs, but in fact, they were hydrogen.
Well, it gets even scarier from here because you know what happens to be just on the other side of the planet from both? Well, it's actually the tests in India. You know what's directly on the other side of the planet from the tests in India? The New Madrid Fault. Which is Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, I know what it is, sure.
Running all the way up through the Mississippi through Memphis, Tennessee. Now, the stress point then hits for Pakistan And we're going to talk about Pakistan because this relates directly into an absolutely incredible Nostradamus quatrain. And I know Nostradamus gets very spooky and very esoteric, but this is really, really clear. And it's a famous quatrain because there's one of only four quatrains that Nostradamus gives that gives a specific date that people have debated over for hundreds of years. And I think we solved it. And we're going to talk about that on the show, and it relates directly to this. But directly on the other side of this, not only do we have in India, in the West Rajasthan, looking at the New Madrid Fault, but then the Pakistani tests, which are up in the northern part of Pakistan, would relate directly to primarily the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Appalachians, which I think is going to trigger a series of quakes somewhere in Pennsylvania and New York. Now, looking at the rest of the map here, the Afghan quake is over at Omaha,
which has been thought to be a fairly geologically stable area.
You would think, but there have been a series of over the last few years a series of very substantial quakes in Pennsylvania, running along Pennsylvania and New York. Now, I don't see. Looking at it right now, oh, I hear music. Is that music? Are we at the bottom of the hour?
That's music.
Okay, looking at it right now, and actually, when we come back. Let me tell you exactly what I'm seeing for that particular area right along the New Madrid Fault and also up through the northern parts of Colorado and through Wyoming and Utah.
All right, I'm sure you've got everybody's attention. Anybody, here's another one for you. Sean David Morton, the prophet with more hits than Vince and Larry, the crash test dummies. We'll be right back. Back now to Sean David Morton, and we've got so much material we've got to cover that I'm going to just sort of let Sean lay it out, and then we'll get to phones when we can. Sean?
That's great. Okay. Let me see. You were going to ask me prophet. Let me tell you what the word prophet actually means.
Okay.
The word prophet in the Old Testament had very little to do with predicting the future. The actual word in the Hebrew had to do with someone who was a teacher. It literally meant singer of righteousness, and it was simply a person who... back in the Old Testament, taught the laws of creation, and that if you obeyed the laws of creation, certain things would happen, positive things, the nation would be strong and powerful, and the people would be happy, and if you disobeyed those laws, that you would then have fires and famines and floods and earthquakes and eventually foreign occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so many people call themselves the prophet of doom. I'd just as soon be known as the prophet of Zoom, because I think that that all of these things that are happening are... the birth pangs of a new and remarkable age, and that I think that it's an amazing opportunity for people to express themselves individually, to begin to form community, to begin to literally change the timeline and change the future and create and fight for the future that we want. I think that it is destructive and ultimately self-defeating to simply say to people that, well, you know, the western part of the United States is going to fall into the ocean and it's going to be all terrible I can guarantee that if by this time next year that the western United States falls into the ocean, that I will guarantee everybody gets a refund on their newsletter subscription. But it's,
just one little problem with that.
What's that?
I believe you hail from and live in Hermosa Beach.
Yeah, that's right. So I'll have to be somewhere else so people can get a refund on their newsletter, huh?
Yeah, in other words, where would you be? You'd be at the bottom of the Pacific. Wouldn't be sending anybody
anything.
Well,
that's why I'm saying it's not going to happen that way. I think that the, and that is why I am in very solid disagreement with a number of other people, because I truly believe, Art, that the United States is spoken of in prophecy, that the people of the United States have a destiny which they need to start living up to. They need to start understanding their heritage. They need to start understanding the amazing structure of the Constitution and the sovereign citizen aspect of, for the first time in 5,000 years, we literally have a form of government that was patterned on the laws of the Old Testament and the laws of creation.
We didn't quite finish with prophecy and the word prophet. Now, having defined it as you did, would you are you comfortable calling yourself a prophet?
Yeah, I mean, just a lot of people, you know, they get the idea that you know, it had very little to do, you know, in the old days with predicting a specific earthquake. It had, or, you know, what's going to happen here, what's going to happen there. You know, it had more to do with teaching people the actual laws of creation and that if you disobey them, certain other things happen. So I'm comfortable with it, but just people misunderstand the term. So, you know, because they jump up and down and say, well, we should hit you with rocks if you're ever wrong with a prediction. And
that's right. They do. They say the prophet says, why, you're either 100% or you are the devil's toe jam.
Well, the only thing I have to say to that is that if you look at the prophet Jonah, who was one of my favorite prophets in the Old Testament, he came and preached to the city of Nineveh. And the people, and after, you know, after jumping off a boat and the whole story about getting swallowed by the whale, et cetera, et cetera. But after preaching to the people of Nineveh, literally taking off his clothes in the middle of the town, burning them and walking from one end to the other 3 days, and actually Nineveh is in ancient Iraq, and after preaching to the people, they said, wow, this guy's got a track record, he knows what he's talking about, and they repented and they meditated and they prayed and the land was spared. So it's the prophets in the Old Testament that no one listened to that, you know, their predictions eventually came true because people weren't listening to what they had to say.
Can I ask you about something that's really been on my mind and the mind of many Americans now for quite some time, and that is the weather.
Okay.
Sean, there is no question about the fact that our weather has changed. I used to say it's about to change. Now I'm saying it has changed. It's obvious all over the world, not just here, all over the world, what's going on and what will go on.
Okay. There's a number of astronomical events that are occurring that have a lot to do, and this is linked. A lot of people blame the HAARP project for a lot of this going on, but I've got sort of an alternate explanation of the HAARP project that I think is very interesting. My Uncle Tommy is actually a captain in the Marine Corps now, and actually it's kind of funny because he's my uncle, but he's my age. He's only 8 months older than I am, and he's a captain in the Marine Corps. And my Uncle Donnie is with an admiral with the Office of Naval Intelligence who has a lot of information on this. Couple of things going on. Back in 94, in the Delphi Associates newsletter and all the way through this, I talked about how the Shoemaker-Levy comet, that when these gigantic asteroids broke up, when this comet broke up and began to smash into Jupiter, that it was going to change the gravitational flux of the entire solar system. And that the shockwave of the Shoemaker-Levy comet was going to take until about the year 2000 or 2001 to actually hit the planet, but that you would begin to see these massive weather everything that had to do with the air would begin to change. These, in 1994, I called them hypercanes, and that these super hurricanes would begin to hit the planet as the jet stream began to then dip down, as you mentioned, happened in Moscow and has been happening in Colorado and all across the United States.
And Ed Dame's prediction that was on the money.
Well, and the second thing that is going on, and actually we talked about the jet stream dipping down back in December and in January.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about how it was going to be wind. It was going to be wind and fire that were going to be the biggest molders of what was going to be happening in the coming year.
We sure as hell had that.
The second thing that's going on is that you've got a remaking of the sun. That in December I said that there were going to be record or massive solar flare activity that was going to create not only a flux on the planet and the atmosphere, but was going to literally rip a hole open in the ozone layer. That was going to then cause, and actually we're going to talk about that right now because I've got it marked out on the map, that was going to cause a gigantic heat wave in the southwestern United States from all the way from Los Angeles across Arizona, New Mexico through Texas. And that this remaking of the sun had a lot to do with the changing of the weather patterns, with the heating up of the Earth and of the planet, because the sun is going through it's totally off its 11-year cycle now as far as the sunspot activity goes. But I also think, and this is my own metaphysical opinion, and forgive me for getting off on a rant here, but I do think that that it has to do with the consciousness of humanity, and I think that we are so powerfully linked into the cosmic forces of the universe, and people do not give themselves or their spirituality or their thoughts the credit that they should or the power that they should, because thoughts are literally things. We live in a holographic universe that is literally created by the mind. And people need to understand that there is a direct link between themselves, and I think the sun and various other bodies.
Okay, here's a question for you, right down the same alley. Neil Slade is a guest that I'm going to have on when I get back from vacation. I've had him on before. He talks about the power of the mind. And he maintains that a single person can do something called cloud busting, which means actually affect cloud formations with their mind.
Yep.
I don't know if that's true or not, but if that's true, then what would happen if millions of people tried to affect the weather?
Well, it's
would be in the interest.
The problem is that nobody's ever happy with the weather, are they? I mean, farmers love the rain, and the people in the city hate it.
So. Well, I mean, suppose though millions were started to concentrate on rain for Florida, where they very desperately need real rain. Is it an experiment that's worth trying?
Well, I think we can affect that consciousness because it is my belief that human beings represent the neural net of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
That we represent that what I was talking about before, that there are six chakra points across the planet, these various mm-hmm. cities where as each one begins to activate, it's taking the planet itself, Gaia, as an organism, as a living being. And this goes directly back to what we were talking about as far as prophecy goes. That there is not a single religious system, not Judaism, not ancient Christianity, not Hinduism, not Zoroaster or Baha'i or Buddhism, that does not believe that the way you act and the way you behave spiritually does not have a direct effect on the planet. Now, today we call it biorelativity, but in the old days it just meant that, unless you were kind to your fellow man and obeyed certain laws and certain codes, that the planet itself would strike back at you. Literally treating humanity as a disease, as a bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
That if you continue to insult or ignore the Mother Earth, that, you don't mess with Mother Nature, as the old saying went. And I think that humanity forms the neural net of the Earth. It's symbolically why the Great Pyramid of Giza does not have a capstone, because there's no seventh chakra to the planet. Human beings represent the seventh chakra of the Earth. We are the thought patterns and processes, the neural net, if you will, the brain cells of planet Earth, which is probably, we're the brain cells, no wonder she's acting so crazy. So here's one other thing, too, is that there are the HEART Project, the high-altitude oral resonance projectors. It's been vilified and demonized because they've been doing insane experiments with the HEART Project. Now, there is a HEART antenna farm or field in Alaska. There is another one directly above Calgary in Alberta. There's another one in Cameroon, in Africa, and there's another one that they just kick-started about 6 months ago in the northern part of England.
That's right.
What the HEART Project does is it literally is a Tesla technology that brings the electromagnetic force of the planet up out of the planet and amplifies it. Now, I've heard the mathematical number bandied about by various scientists. I don't know if this is the actual strength of it, but can actually amplify Earth energies by 10 to the 20th power.
Wow.
Some have said as high as the 30th power. I think that's a little high. But by 10 to the 20th power. And what the HEART Project does is that not only can it control certain aspects of the electromagnetic grid line of the planet, the grid line of the planet can be used to induce, on a low level, can induce mood states, can possibly release certain types of, can certainly do things to people in the dream state when they're the most vulnerable and the most open.
Is it worth asking, for example, if HEART is affecting the weather? And I was interviewed by a radio station after I got off the air yesterday, and they asked me that exact question. And I said, I wish it was that simple because you could turn it off.
Yes.
So
is it affecting the weather? Yes. And the reason it's affecting the weather is because they're doing a whole series of experiments that, there's an interview in Popular Science where they asked the guy, won't these experiments affect the weather? And the scientist bragged and said, well, I guess we'll see, won't we?
God.
And it was insane. And
I guess we'll see.
And even Popular Science was saying, what kind of dopey macho attitude is that?
Yeah.
These guys are playing God with the weather patterns on the planet.
There's a lot of arrogance in science.
But here's two things that are interesting about it. I actually thought that, oh, my God, they're affecting the weather, and holy smokes. Well, then my Uncle Donnie gets me on the phone, and he says, that what the HEART Project is doing is that they harden sections of the ionosphere and they create lenses, or actually discs, if you will, so that if we wanted to, for example, this thing about Moscow was very interesting. If we wanted to fry Moscow, we would actually create a pocket or a lens, harden the upper part of the atmosphere, and we could then bounce microwaves off that hardened lens, and we could cook everybody in Moscow.
Did you hear what happened to Moscow? Thousands of trees and poles just snapped off like twigs.
Here's the other thing that you can do with it, is that simply by having a satellite up in the air, you can point a very advanced version of a negative ion generator that people use to, cleanse the air in their homes.
Yes.
You can actually point a negative ion generator, an advanced military version of it, from a satellite, and you can push the jet stream down. It's really easy. and it dips down to the ground, and you can destroy an entire target, a whole city, if you wanted to. You could also do the same thing with the HARP project, where you can actually create a solidified area in the atmosphere and actually bounce a certain beam, which will alter the jet stream for either weather modification or to create high winds, because, I mean, the jet stream is hundreds of miles an hour up the, you know, up in the atmosphere.
Yes.
Now, here's the third process for this, and people don't mention this, but here is a covert use for the HARP project, and why there may be four or five or six of these things all across the planet, maybe working, doing different things. Let's say, for example, that the military is afraid that they know that the sun is literally remaking itself. They're now watching these record solar flares that have been exploding since January.
I know.
And let's say, for example, that the Earth gets caught in a cosmic radiation storm, or there is a solar flare or plume that could severely damage or harm life on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
One possible use of the HARP project would be to actually create a force field, if you will, in the ionosphere that could conceivably protect the planet from some kind of cosmic radiation storm. That's another use.
Interesting.
Another use, that they can actually harden the ionosphere, creating a lens, if you will, that can actually block certain types of harmful cosmic radiation from actually hitting the Earth.
I wonder if that is actually an unstated goal.
This is another thing that, my Uncle Donnie was in this for a long time. He was in naval intelligence, and he was saying, well, that's another thing they could use it for. What happens if the sun is changing and it poses some sort of threat? Of course, a cosmic storm like that would begin to wipe out, satellites that are in geosynchronous orbit.
Oh, yes.
Hence maybe the Book of Revelation talking about there being silence in heaven for half an hour. So,
Here's something. Again, those absolutely incredible photographs that I just posted of the object near the contrail.
Very cool.
I just got the following email, short and simple. And I think that it's deeper than it sounds. Art, I think those photos are a bunch of bunk. Don't you know that Eve was the mother of all? Now, what this person is saying to me is, these photos are trash, not because I can explain them away, but because I'm deeply religious and there can't be any such thing, so I deny them. I mean, isn't that what that says?
Well, can he actually see them on your website, or does just a blank space come up in his mind when he looks at them?
Well, it I have no comment.
I can't see them, they can't be there, therefore they aren't there.
Well, something like that, yeah. I mean, that is actually what that says, and that relates to the way some people who are listening to you tonight react to what you're saying.
Here's the difficult part, Art, and you probably face this every day, is that just trying to convince people of the technology we have is hard enough. I mean, this is the stuff that's in, it's not a secret. It's in popular science. It's in,
right.
It used to be in Omni. It's in these various magazines. The old joke that if you're not paranoid, you're just not paying attention. So the aspect of this is it's so difficult to simply convince the people of the technology we have. I mean, I started this with Area 51 back in 91. When I climbed up that hill and looked down on the base, I mean, we were watching this stuff test at 6:30 every night on Wednesdays. And the challenge was, all these people didn't believe, well, you come out there with us and you tell us what it is. You tell us if this isn't a technology that's light years beyond anything we think we have.
By the way, I've said this before on the air, and I'll say it again, because I think next week, Newsweek is going to do like a page and a half or 2 pages on me.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And the Newsweek, not photographer, but reporter was out here at the house, doing the interview. He was here for several hours. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of the interview, all of a sudden you hear this outside. And we all went running outside, and here is the biggest damn black helicopter you ever saw in your whole life at about 200 feet, screaming across the desert floor,
wow,
headed straight out to Area 51.
Yeah.
And he said, I would not have believed this if I hadn't seen it. That's his comment.
This is the Newsweek guy?
Yeah.
Man, he doesn't get out of the house much, does he?
Well, I don't think he gets out, to this part of the desert that much.
That's a land of mystery out there.
Yeah, I told him it was fairly common, and that sucker was headed straight over the mountains to Area 51.
Let me cruise across the western part of the United States here so that we can... I know we're coming up on a break here in about 4 minutes, so...
No, we're coming up on a break right now.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, okay. We're going to get to earthquake activity in Los Angeles, what's going on with Mammoth, what's going to happen with the heat wave across Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, hurricane stuff in Texas, and then we're going to talk about Colorado, Wyoming, and I promise we'll try to get to everything in the next hour.
That ought to just about take care of everybody and keep them in place. This is Coast to Coast AM. Sean David Morton is my guest. Don't touch that dial. It says urgent Omaha, Nebraska. It's email.
Okay.
I have no way of confirming it until I hear, but it reads as follows. There was a 3.4 magnitude earthquake reported in the Omaha World Herald. It occurred about 400 miles west of Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
And I was recalling what you said earlier about Omaha.
Well, that would be exactly right. It was in that general area. That would be where the other side of the planet of where the Afghan quake would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nuclear testing, like we said earlier, the nuclear testing in India, the other side of the planet from that would be along the New Madrid Fault in Tennessee. And then the Indian tests would directly relate to, and actually, like I said, this was just a sort of thumbnail guessing on my part here. There's probably a lot of experts that might, hopefully, will call in and pinpoint the exact spot that's on the other side of the planet. But it would directly relate to the fissure points in Pennsylvania that run up along the Appalachians and the Smoky Mountains.
All right. Now, we're going to move around the country, which people enjoy, and they can hear what's going to occur in their particular area. So,
okay.
Once again, Sean David Morton, the prophet with more hits than Cheech and Chong... is going to talk about your part of the country. Go ahead, Sean.
Okay, let's start out with California here first. The first thing that I'm seeing with California is Northern California around the Redding Mount Shasta area, a lot of fires in August. Another big series of fires. Obviously we've got the fires in Florida, but it's the heat wave that I was talking about months ago that was going to start to sweep across the entire southern portion of the United States. We also talked about, let me go up to Alaska, since we obviously just got back from Alaska, and we've got a lot of listeners up in Alaska. Big fire, west of Anchorage, somewhere near Stony River, McGrath, but a lot of fire activity up in Alaska. They've had very mild winters. They're having a lot of problems with trees dying off there because the winters have been so mild. It was actually colder in Los Angeles than it was in Alaska when we were up on the boat.
I know.
Going up through the inside passage there.
I know.
Which was very, very strange. So the fires that I see for Northern California around the Redding, there's a big square up around the Redding Mount Shasta area. There's also going to be some fires in the, once again, in the Reno area. It's going to be west of Reno this time, a little bit northwest of Lake Tahoe. More fires in that particular area. And then now coming down, I've been checking San Francisco. San Francisco seems relatively quiet, and as I said, the closer we get to an event, the easier it is for me to pick things up off the map. What I do is I've got maps laid out in front of me, and I just sort of put myself into a kind of sensitive meditative state, and I run my hands over the maps, and I pick up sparks of energy in my hands that come up off the map, and then I try to project forward that energy, saying, okay, it's June, July, August, September, and I'll get a spark or a hit, and then I'll try to... Let's say September 1, 2, 3, 4, and then that energy will build on that part of the map as far as a plateau, almost like a flat range of energy that then creates a window for that event to occur, and then it slacks down on the other side. So with that said, it's a remote viewing technique or a projection technique where you can actually pick up energy that comes out of the maps. Now, with Los Angeles, we've got a quake coming in L.A., and the next quake that we've got, and we've had a number of very unusual quakes. They just announced that they found a fault line that runs around the eastern section of Los Angeles, pretty much through downtown L.A.
Yeah, I heard that.
Called the Elysian Fault Line. And they just announced this fault line, and we are back in the same pattern for Los Angeles that we were in for the Northridge quake. And the Northridge quake was probably one of my biggest hits in the newsletter because I predicted that I predicted months in advance in the newsletter the exact location of the quake, the epicenter of the quake, the magnitudes of the quake. We're also going to have very substantial fires. Now, this is coming up around October, again, with fires in the Malibu area. Of course, you know, the joke is Los Angeles doesn't have seasons anymore. We've got the fire season, the flood season, the mudslide season, and then the riot season, of course. So those are our, you know, we don't have the seasons here in L.A. Those are the seasons we have. So there's a right around a ring of L.A. County, there are going to be fires once again. They're going to hit Laguna Beach. They're going to also hit just north of San Diego. But it's a ring around L.A. County with very, very severe fires in Ventura. And this is going to happen in, it looks like, September and October.
Mm-hmm.
And then the quake that we're looking at happens on just the other side of Los Angeles. And it's pretty substantial. It's between, I would say, a 5.5 and a 6. Now, the only time I've been off, I've never been off on dates or on the plateaus, but I have been off on magnitudes. This one looks pretty substantial. It's going to be bigger than the quake seems because this quake is going to butt into the Hollywood Fault, and you're going to hear a lot about it because I think it's going to affect the studios. In other words, it's going to run. This Hollywood Fault literally runs right under a lot of the major studios and runs right down Santa Monica Boulevard and down Sunset Boulevard. But we're looking at late December, January of '99 for that to happen. So that's going to be much later in the year.
Maybe the studios know something. Let me tell you something that was just announced in our newspaper in Little Pahrump, Nevada, where I live.
Okay.
They are about to build a movie studio complex here in Pahrump.
Wow.
That will be larger than MGM. That will be the largest movie studio complex in the world.
Well, maybe we'll be neighbors now.
Can you,
I can come stay at your house and take care of your cat.
Yeah, it was the front page headline. I can't believe it. What's happening to my little town?
Well, it's, you're just becoming too popular for Alan Good, Art. Everybody's moving to you, I guess. You know, if the mountain won't come to Muhammad, you know. So all across the southern part of the United States, we were talking about this heat wave that's already occurring. Already
sure.
They've had record temperatures sure. in Hollywood and in the valley in Southern California. This heat wave over the summer is going to affect Arizona, New Mexico, all the way down through Texas. It's already hit 120 degrees. In the central sections of Texas. The biggest problem is going to be not only in Los Angeles, but this heat wave is going to affect the power grid. And the power grid has a lot to do because the power grid is directly connected with the electromagnetic energy of the planet. And because the electromagnetic energy of the planet is jumping or shifting, you're going to see all across the Southwest, the power grid is going to go out for hours and sometimes days at a time. So there's going to be nowhere to hide from the heat. In other words, there's going to be no air conditioning, there's going to be no electricity for quite some time as the power grid begins to go off. And as I said, I believe that this is going to be like a firestorm that's going to occur all across the south and the southwest that has to do with these pockets opening in the ozone layer, which is already starting to happen across Los Angeles and across central parts of Arizona. Okay, coming up in July, this is July, August again, the northwestern corner, it's centered up by Oak Creek and a place called Gremling and Glenwood Springs and Walcott. The whole northwestern corner of Colorado is coming off as very hot. In other words, it's glowing. So there's going to be major, major fires in Colorado all through July, lasting all the way through August. As a matter of fact, one of the biggest things that I'm seeing all across the United States, all the way through the year 1999, is that the landscape of the United States is going to change not so much through earthquakes, but through fires. It's going to be like a river of fire across the U.S., very much like what's happening in Florida. Just whole pockets of the U.S. just catch on fire.
All right. By the way, I don't tag at the end of this. I have a lot of listeners in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and we should really touch on what might occur in Canada as well.
Okay.
I don't know if you prepared for that or not. They're just to the north of us.
I got to sort of look up there. I mean, the primary thing with Canada is going to be the fact that most of the most of Canada, the tundra is simply melting. The entire climate of Canada is very much changing as the sort of the Siberian cold front, or these horrific Siberian winters, are moving down to the central part of the United States, where we grow most of our food. And that's another thing that's going to happen in 1999, is that you're going to see for the first time very substantial food shortages in the United States, lasting all the way through the year 2000, because the weather is going to be so harsh and severe in the central part of the U.S. that the bees will not be able to pollinate, and that farmers will just not be able to grow food over entire expanses of the West. The primary thing that occurs with Canada is that the eventually, and I'm talking down the line here, around 2005 or so, the western part of Canada actually becomes part of a confederation of the United States. What I see the U.S. eventually becoming is 13 independent nation states, or the sovereign countries of America, that eventually become known as the NAU, or the North American Union. And of this, Mexico, the central part of Mexico and Canada, eventually become part of the North American Union. And the flag for the NAU is the old Gaston flag, which is the and has the serpent on it on the yellow field that says "Don't tread on me." Eventually becomes that the flag for the northern part of the United States, that whole North American Union. And Omaha, Nebraska, strangely enough, becomes the central capital of finance for the entire world. This is very far off in the future. This is somewhere, you know, this is from my projections almost 100 years from now, which we're actually going to get into really quick here, I hope. About 100 years from now, Omaha, Nebraska is the central hub of the U.S. because the entire economy is based very much on commodities. It's based primarily on food and being able to feed the world. So there's nothing really major going on in Canada now other than sort of the slow melt and the climate change that's occurring with the tundra melting as the Canadian climate becomes much warmer.
Would that not then make them the future food belt?
Yes. Well, Saskatchewan, Alberta is going to be, they're going to grow grains, wheat. As the climate changes, there's going to be more food coming out of Canada into the United States than the United States is actually currently importing into Canada.
Makes sense.
The earthquake stuff that I'm also seeing for Colorado, once again, I'm seeing Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then Fort Collins in the northern central part. It's sort of like a ring that goes up, but I'm seeing some very substantial earthquake activity. I mean, we're looking at probably about a 5.5. Between July 5th and July 20th, and then through September, I'm picking up, and this is a very strange ring, but there's another quake that seems to hit up through Colorado, up through Wyoming, and it seems to touch on the area. Fort Bridger is in the center of it, Rock Springs, but it touches an area of the southwestern corner of Wyoming and the upper part of Utah, Salt Lake City, up into Idaho. It's very odd, but there are some very substantial earthquakes coming for this whole area just above Denver.
You know, say what they want. People are always bitching at me that prophets are so non-specific, and you are so specific.
Well, I have been, and that's what I print in my newsletter. And it's just because as I'm running my hands over the map, I'm picking things up. Another major thing, and I have to say this for the people in Texas, is that late September and October, massive hurricanes. I mean, hurricanes that are going to hit the underbelly of the Gulf, magnitudes 3 and 4. Houston is going to have some major flooding in September, and these hurricanes are just going to pound the bottom half of Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi. The hurricane season this year, it is going to be terrifying, and it's going to hit mostly the entire eastern seaboard. It's going to be later than most people think. It's not going to be July, August. It's going to start late September and October. So it looks to me as though, and one more thing here, because I'm moving across here. I've sort of drawn on the map here. I mean, Florida is just, for me, lighting up, obviously, because there are all those fires there now. Let me see. Earthquake activity in Nebraska. There's also some earthquake activity that happens in Illinois, and I think that has directly to do with looking at Springfield, right on the border of Missouri and Illinois, but the northern part of the New Madrid Fault is going to start to rumble and shake just over the summer. And then August, in August, from the 5th to the 30th of August, there's going to be a whole series of quakes in Pennsylvania that's going to be right outside of Scranton, but it looks like Pennsylvania, New York. It's at the top of that mountain range running up into Pennsylvania. There's going to be a series of quakes, not huge, but they're going to be enough to, I think, spook some people in New York. But that's going to be through August 5th to the 30th. And then the weather, the primary thing is going to be much later in the year, like I said, September, October. A whole series of hurricanes, you know, 5 to 6 hurricanes that are going to start rolling off Africa that are not only going to hit it's going to pincer the entire eastern part of the United States, where you've got stuff coming up from the Gulf of Mexico that's going to be hitting Texas from the one side, and then other hurricanes that are going to be hitting as far north as Pennsylvania and New York, and then moving all the way down through North and South Carolina, down into Georgia. But, I mean, just terrifying weather patterns happening later on in the year. So it's a late hurricane season for the East Coast. A lot of this, and let me segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which was the date of September 27th of 1998 and why that date is particularly important.
Why?
That date is given in, and I talk a lot about the Great Pyramids of Giza. I went to the British International School, which is part of the University of Cairo, when I was 16. I went on the trip with you, the Alaskan cruise, because I very much wanted to hang out with Zahi Hawass, who I've known for a long time. But making the pyramids a study, the pyramid is, in fact, in my opinion, a gigantic prophecy in stone. And that the pyramid itself describes a 7,000-year period in human history that represents 7 prophetic days of prophecy, each day lasting 1,000 years. September 27th is important from all these different angles. Number one, September 27th of 98 is the end of a massive cycle for the United States. The United States was formed politically, mind you, not the actual formation on July 4th of 1776, but politically when the Articles of Confederation came together and when the Bill of Rights was actually signed, which was September 27th, which was a grand jubilee year in 1791. Now, the average lifespan of a nation is 200 years, and after 200 years, that nation has a responsibility to do certain things according to the laws of creation, which is a whole other story in and of itself. But I think that the pattern began of this last 7 years began September 27th of 1991. We have now had a 7-year period of, I guess you could call it, punishment and or grace. In other words, it's sort of been the carrot and the stick as to which way the United States is going to jump. And at September 27th of 1998, that 7-year cycle, or should I say that 207-year cycle, ends for the United States, which means that you are going to see the beginning of the political and economic breakup of the United States government of what was originally formed 207 years ago. It is also, according to the Great Pyramid, September 27th of 2 BC was the birth of the central messianic figure, pointing very specifically to the historical person that we call Emmanuel ben Joseph, or Jesus Christ, as he's more popularly known. And September 27th of 2 BC now points to September 27th of 1998, that exact date is now the beginning of the third millennium and is also the beginning of the sixth day, or the next 1,000 years of prophecy relating to the Great Pyramid. And
all right, hold it right there, and we'll just sort of hang them up until the bottom of the hour. I like things that hang people up. Sean David Morton, we'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Kingdom of Philip Nye. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again is Art.
Oh, my God, you should see what we've got on the website. I guess the crop circle season is now in full swing in Britain. Oh, my. Haverberry Truslo, I believe it is, reported on the 20th of June is up there. And when you see this one, it will blow you away. Andover, Hampshire is up there. It will blow you away as well. But this Haverberry, oh, my goodness. Keith just got that up on the website. Oh, my. Is all I can say. Oh, my. And I hope if Sean is out there and listening, that he will take the time and trouble, if he's able to get online while he's talking with me, to go take a look. Latest crop circle in England. We've got news on what's going on in Thailand. And I'm sorry to say, this virus, number 71, is spreading. There's also an open letter from Pamela Stonebrook for you to read. All of this new on the website in the last hour. But these new crop circles in England, oh my word, you've got to take a look. We'll ask Sean a little bit about crop circles here in a moment. Within the last hour, we just got these new crop circle photographs from England in, and they will blow you away. On my website at www.artbell.com, along with so much more we've talked about tonight. Once again, here's Sean David Morton. Sean,
yes, sir.
I understand that you are on the line that you would otherwise use to get on the net, so you can't do that. But
right, because it's the digital landline, so
yeah.
it's a lot clearer. So
it is very clear. All right, so but you mentioned to me, you said, is that the one about the solar flare? What are you talking about?
Well, there was a crop circle that was actually, I think it was May. The crop circle season usually starts about May 5th or so. And the circle, if they can get a hold of it, is a representation of the sun, and then you see representations of Mercury and Venus on different sides of the sun, and then the Earth, and from the huge ball that represents the sun, on the opposite side of the sun facing away from the Earth is this gigantic solar plume, or this, this big spike, this wave, if you will, that's actually coming out of the sun. On the opposite side of the sun from the Earth, possibly as a warning that maybe this is a solar flare that's about to happen on the other side of the sun, that had it been facing the Earth, may have in fact, wiped out life as we know it on the Earth. But it was a very startling crop circle. And of course, last year, I think one of the most interesting ones was the representation of all the planets, the inner planets, with the asteroid belt to the outside and the sun in the center, and the Earth missing from the orbit. You probably saw that one. It's got the sun in the middle, Mercury, Venus, and then a ring which represents the orbit of the Earth, with the Earth missing, and then Mars, and then a representation of the asteroid belt.
Would you care to comment on what you think crop circles are?
I've seen Michael Glickman actually has the Crop Circle Research Institute right here in Santa Monica, and hopefully.
Right.
We're going to interview him for hard copy next season, because we're on hiatus right now. He had the video that was a very controversial that was taken of the small spheres that were actually moving over the field, that was actually appeared to be creating a crop circle directly on the video. Colin Andrews disagreed with it, saying it was a special effect, but I think it's legitimate. To tell you the truth, I don't really know. I have a very good friend, Akshara Ishaw, who is a Pleiadian contactee. He's actually got a couple of his photographs up on your website. He says that they are that they're a language, that they actually are a mathematical, musical language that mean a number of things. One, they are prophecies for certain people. Two, that they are warnings. That he claims are actually being done by a race of beings called the Arcturians, and the Arcturians are sort of like energy beings, if you will, that exist in sort of like a fifth dimensional time space, and that they are warnings to certain aspects of the Dark Lords, if you will, or evil people on the Earth, those in power, that unless they allow humanity to evolve and ascend to the next level, that they will be dealt with very harshly and very severely, that the Arcturians and the Pleiadians apparently will actually physically do something about it. And the third one is that they are mandalas, And for those that are interested in getting pictures of the crop circles and meditating on the designs themselves, there was a technique that was taught to me in Nepal when I lived in the Tangbache Monastery there, where we would look at mandalas, and the visualization you would do is to bring the mandala off the paper and bring it from out of two dimensions into imagining it as three dimensions, and it would then open up a fourth dimensional space within your mind. So people that meditate on the crop circles and try to imagine the circles as 3D, if you will.
Sean, you know, I had a guest on called Doug Ruby. He's an airline pilot.
Oh, yes, I heard him. Yeah.
And you heard that, Jeff?
Yeah, he was talking about the engines.
That's right. I'm going to try and repeat that, I think, while I'm on vacation. I think it's one of the ones I'm going to repeat. And he actually got to spinning crop circles, and as you heard, they took on a completely new configuration when they would spin a three-dimensional.
In three dimensions, yes. They're amazing in three dimensions.
Anyway, that's worth hearing, folks, while I'm gone. Also, I don't want to drag you away from this. September 27th.
Okay, that's what we're going to talk about. Let me do one other thing here. Let me give everybody the 800 number one more time.
Sure.
We've got a new 800 number for anybody that did not get their newsletter subscription from December and January. We literally had thousands of people write in and subscribe to the newsletter. Some people got lost in the cracks. We entered most of the data, but as a matter of fact, we entered all the data, but we got lost on some people as to who paid what. So anybody that was not getting their proper subscription, we've got you in the database. Drop us a note or give us a call. The new 800 number, it'll be up tomorrow, so don't give it a call tonight. It's 800-723-6962. That's 800-723-6962. We've got the website up now. It's a work in progress. The website's linked into your website. It's www.delphiassociates.com. And for anybody that wants to subscribe to the Delphi Associates newsletter, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow, it's really unique as far as what we cover in the newsletter, and you've got to have some form of alternative media telling you what's going on. It's a 12-issue, one-year subscription. It's $50 as a donation to the Delphi Associates newsletter. We do offer free subscriptions to people that are in jail or are incarcerated that are trying to better themselves.
That's nice.
And so anybody that's out there that's currently locked up in the pound, you know, if you're trying to better yourself and trying to learn and trying to become a better person, I feel that I have a biblical obligation to help those people. So if they can call in and we send out free subscriptions to them. And for senior citizens, just out of respect for my elders and our elders, you know, if you are truly indigent and on a fixed income, we offer a discount subscription for $35 to people who are on fixed incomes and can't afford it. Of course, if you're over 65 and you're rolling in dough, we'd appreciate it if you'd pay the $50. Anyway, Delphi Associates, you can make your checks out to PRI and send them to our address is 2207, that's 2207, Hermosa Avenue, H-E-R-M-O-S-A. It means beautiful in Spanish. And we're in Hermosa Beach, and that's in the California Republic. And our zip code is 90254. And the number again is 800-723-6962. Okay.
All right. September 22nd, 98, begins the collapse of the U.S. government as we have known it. Meaning what, and what will it become?
Okay. '93, and I didn't really know what it was that was going to knock it all down until a lot of this information started coming out about the year 2K. Of course, you know, you covered that over and over. Much better than I could ever cover it.
Yeah, but I want to ask you about it. You said a number of things that could be interpreted to tie into Y2K.
Right.
Do you see anything with respect to Y2K in what you have read for that particular time period?
Absolutely. The Y2K, it's very interesting. There's a number of things about Y2K, and I'll gloss over them briefly. First off, there's a whole number of fixes that can be used to actually fix Y2K. Number one, the first fix, and this, I came up with this myself. I mean, it's easy. Computers are stupid. They don't know how many months the year 1999 has in it. So all you'd actually have to do is get into the computer and change the 12 months to 99 months, another two-digit date, and the government would be able to rather simply buy themselves another 8.25 years to fix their problem. That's one thing. The second thing is Robert Beeson, who was featured in People magazine, who we went out and talked to in Tucson. He created the ASC2 computer language, who has a fix for the year 2K problem, claiming that it's $300,000 a system, and he could put this thing in, and it would simply act as a data upgrade that would change two digits to four digits, which would then fix it. We asked him if he offered it to the military, to Social Security, the IRS. He says he did, and he said they didn't want it. The rather nefarious and somewhat sinister aspect of this is that the government already has a computer system in place to take over the Y2K, that maybe this is a way for them to gain complete control over Medicare, to maybe renege on a lot of their debts as far as Social Security goes, because they've already spent most of that money, to rearrange everything. And, of course, the theory behind this is that what they've got going on is these supercomputers that are called Beast Computers, B-E-A-S-T.
It's true.
Which were developed out at Area 51 originally because they stand for Battle Engagement Area Simulation and Tracking. And the Beast Computers uplink directly to a satellite that can use global positioning systems and relate directly to computer chips that are then placed in the back of the hand and or the forehead. The reason you place chips in the back of the hand or the forehead is because the galvanic skin response of the heat change on your forehead and the back of your hand, your body changes temperature in those two locations more rapidly than anywhere else, and they would actually power what they call a film lithium diode. It's actually inside the chip, and these chips are called MARCs, which stands for Multiple Automated Readout Computer Chips. So it's literally, they're using the terminology of the Bible to just slap you in the face. If you look at, I think it's Revelation 22, where it talks about the mark of the beast, and that these are actual computer tags that go into people. If you continue the biblical analogy, everybody that takes this mark of the beast, biblically, in the Bible, everybody that gets this chip, within 8 to 18 months, breaks out in a plague, a disease, quite literally, that is a burning or a bubbling of the skin, which looks sort of like a very rapid version of leprosy. And, of course, it's my theory, playing out the analogy, that there's some kind of maybe nuclear power source or some kind of isotope that's actually inside each one of these chips. And the chips are defective, and they begin to leak into the bloodstream so that everybody that gets these chips breaks out in what Revelations describes literally as the first great plague, or the first vial being opened in the book of Revelation. And of course, you've got four horsemen of the apocalypse. The first horseman is the white horseman, which represents the gospel age, or the age of enlightenment, or the age of Christ consciousness. The second one is the red horseman of war. The third one is the black horseman, who comes carrying a set of scales, and that is the imposition of a financial system or structure upon the world. And the last of the horsemen is the pale horse, or what is also known as the green or the livid horse of disease and plague that comes directly after that. So if you look at the 20th century as one long war from 1914 on, with all the various sides just doing nothing but stopping to take a breath and rearm and repopulate, and then the coming financial system being maybe the whole European economic system, because their eventual goal is to merge Russia with Europe, with the United States, and of course North and South America and Japan. And the only two nation states or power blocks that are outside of the Western European banking sphere are China and Islam. And then massive wars would be fought to eventually bring China and Islam into this for global control.
Mm-hmm.
And you're already seeing the banks, as predicted, beginning to merge and confederate. And that's their eventual goal. Their eventual goal is complete, total world domination. And they believe that, when I say they, I'm talking about Nelson Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger and, the 600 guys that basically own most of everything, who meet at the Bilderberger Conference in Scotland, who all get together. You know, and if I had $1 billion and you had $1 billion, we'd get together with a bunch of our buddies that had $1 billion and find out how to make more money, I guess. And they then basically decide what they're going to do with the democracies and who's going to fight who. And there does seem to be a shadow government, if you will, a mother corporation, and that sets up smaller franchises that we call the United States and France and Great Britain and Russia. And these franchises sort of war against each other, sort of like Pepsi owning Pizza Hut and Straw Hat or something.
Right.
You know, these various franchises warring against each other. So that's their eventual goal, and that has nothing to do with prophecy. I read the quarterly reports of the Council on Foreign Relations, and you listen to what David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger say they're going to do to you, and and take them seriously, because they do what they say and they say what they mean. So, getting back to, I'm not sure how we got off on that one, but it's getting back to how the government is going to change. I think that with the economic collapse, that's the total economic collapse, I think it's coming around the year 2000, and well, not around, but specifically in May of 2000, and with people starting to fight to be free, the political system is going to change this November, because nobody is going to support nobody's going to give money to either the Republicans or the Democrats. I think they're both going to come out of this election in debt, with debts that they're not going to be able to pay, and you're going to see third-party candidates and upsets like crazy, because people have now had it. The Republicans have now had their chance to change things, and they haven't really, because Newt Gingrich stopped them. The Democrats haven't really done any better. So I think that this November is going to be a massive change, and I think you're going to see the breakup of the power of the federal government going back to the states and back to the counties and back to the cities, and that's how I think it's going to change. And I think by 2005, you're going to see the whole structure of the federal government begin to simply fall apart as people start to want to be free and literally fight against the oppression of what's going on. And of course, the tax system is going to be completely different. They have no choice now but to change the tax code, either a value-added tax or a flat tax, which they're going to have problems enforcing. And and of course, what's going to be going on with the stock market? That was the next thing we were going to talk about, was the stock market's dates and quotes for what's going to happen with the market. And
can you hit that one quickly?
Yeah, very quick. Well, what I see happening with the market, I for those that subscribe to my newsletter, I talked about May 25th being a downward turn, with June 5th being the crux point of it. You're going to see the market begin to slide, and of course, it doesn't really crash anymore. It's sort of a humping roller coaster motion. The market is going to readjust. It's going to slide down to around 8,000 or so, adjusting itself almost by 1,000 points. Through July, it's going to start to go back up in August, where I think it's going to break 10,000 by mid-August. And then the third week of October, specifically October 16th, watch that as being sort of a Black Friday date, of the crux point of the beginning of a downward trend of the market. Now, it's not going to be the crash. The crash of the market is going to come sometime in May of 2000, when all these planets are aligning in Taurus, which is, and Taurus rules personal property, real estate, personal money. Everybody's going to be thinking, how do I make my money? Where do I put my money? Where does my money go?
Sure.
And so that's what I see happening with the market. But remember that the banks desperately want to not only conglomerate, but they want to get their hands on mutual funds and Social Security. And so grandma and grandpa can roll the dice in the stock market as the interest rates are kept artificially low, so that the stock market becomes more and more attractive. And once they get their hooks into the mutual funds and the Social Security, that's when the market's going to collapse.
Whew. All right. I think that we have covered most of what we intended to cover at the beginning of the program. Is that correct?
I got a couple things here. I mean, there's one really real big thing that I wanted to cover, because it was it had to do with Pakistan and India. Can we cover that one before we take some calls?
We can, but there are some stations that will lose us. What roughly does it have to do with Pakistan,
okay, so,
India?
Okay. Very specifically, for the stations that are going to lose us, there's a Nostradamus quatrain that people have been talking about for many, many years, Century 10, verse 72. It talks about the year 1999, the seventh month. From the sky will come a great king of terror to bring back to life the great king of the Mongols before and after Mars to reign by good luck. And I believe that we've properly translated this, and that it directly relates to India and Pakistan, and relates not only talks about the next great world war beginning between India and Pakistan, but the newsletter that I faxed you earlier today, which was a meditation that I did in August of 94.
We've got to hold it right there. Stand by. We'll be right back. Welcome back.
Thank you.
If you would like to finish up on the market, if there was anything not said properly, go ahead, and then we'll go to phones.
Okay, like I said, my prediction again for the market is that watch the downward trend to continue because of what's going on with Asia this month and then through July, and then the market will start to pick up again. I think it will break towards the end of August and September. I think it'll break 10,000, and then third week of October, you're going to see the beginning of a tumble. It's a readjustment of the market. It's not a complete and total crash.
Right.
And as I said, the banks have got to confederate first. Once the banks get the kind of stock control that they want, they're going to start investing. The stock market's going to go crazy for a period of time. And I don't think that even though our economy is going to start to pretty much go in the toilet by 99, as I'm sure you know, the market is removed from the economy, and sometimes the worse the economy does, the better the market does.
I know.
So, you know, but once again, watch for the year 2000 as being the beginning, or the spring of the year 2000 as being the really substantial collapse of the market, bringing along the collapse of these various banking systems and structures. So,
all right.
And the biggest thing too is that I think that you're going to see silver. Silver, I think, is about $657 an ounce. You're going to see silver go to $12, and I think that's going to be probably the best investment to make now. It's going to be silver and silver coins. Not quite so much gold. Gold is going to go up, but not as much as silver is going to. So,
interesting.
There you go.
All right, to the lines we go. First time caller line. You're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I was lucky enough to be on the Alaskan cruise with Sean and Art.
Oh, hi.
Hi, and
nice to talk to you again.
Yes, unfortunately, I live in Pennsylvania, right between Appalachian and the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much. I have two quick questions.
Okay.
During your short, brief talk where you talk so quickly.
I'm sorry, you got to get the tape then, I guess.
Yeah, I want to. You mentioned the year 1933 and how important that was. For people who were born during that year.
Mm-hmm.
And the other question was, how do you feel about the Casey prediction about the pyramid this year?
Okay, what she's talking about, the Edgar Casey prediction, is that there will be a, that the Lost Library of Atlantis will be found by 1998. I don't know. I mean, one of the amazing things that both Art and I learned from Dr. Zahi Hawass is that there is a chamber that was found underneath the causeway. In the Sphinx Temple complex, there's a crevice, and Art's covered this before with Zahi and I think Daniel Brinkley. There's a crevice that went down underneath the Sphinx Temple complex that went up about 100 yards under the causeway towards the pyramid.
That's right.
And they've actually found a room that they've pumped the water out of. It's called the Tomb of Osiris. And the process that's been going on, as a matter of fact, we're working on a television special about this now. The process that's going on is they found a sarcophagus that had about a 60-ton red granite block across the top of it. They lifted that off, thinking that they would find something in the box, and only to find that this sarcophagus led down, I believe it's another 75 feet, Art?
Yes, sir.
That they're pumping the water out of now. That might, in fact, lead to something else. I mean, we're not talking about the tomb of a pharaoh here. We're actually talking about the tomb of Osiris, which is, of course, you know, the head of the Egyptian pantheon. So Zahi Hawass and the gang are certainly digging diligently and pumping water out. I certainly believe they're on the verge of finding something. It had been my prediction initially that it was going to be an earthquake in Cairo sometime maybe later on this year, at the beginning of 1999, that was going to actually crack something open. And that we would find.
Well, it's going to be at least a political earthquake if it occurs. That's for sure.
Yeah, something like that. So
right. She asked about 1933.
Now, I don't know how I mentioned that.
You had said that people who chose to be born during that year came for sort of like a spiritual mission. That was a very important time in the timeline of the pyramid. Does that ring a bell?
Okay, yeah. It talked about that it was the beginning of the. Inside the pyramid, starting in 1914, it was the beginning of the resurrection of the quick and the dead, if you will, which the pyramid points to as universal reincarnation, that all of the masters and all the Buddhas and all the Christs and all the true great spiritual warriors were going to begin to manifest beginning in 1914, that nobody got to take a lifetime off as far as reincarnation goes, that everybody has to be here for the last great judgment. And beginning in 1933... you have the beginning of the manifestation that the Christos, or the God force, literally began to make it down into the ethers of the planet, that began to change the soul and the spirit and the mind of humanity. That then became physical in 1985, November 30th of 1985. You then had another generation of children being born, and of course, people's minds being changed about their spirituality and, of course, their path. This then culminates on February 21st of 1999, which is only 52 days away from today, that on February 21st of 1999, it's very specific in the angles when you understand the sacred geometry of the pyramid. It says in that sacred geometry that powerful spiritual influences begin to irradiate the enlightened, bringing them closer to spiritual and material perfection beginning in 1985, and that on February 21st of 1999, that the kingdom of heaven comes to earth. Now, this is 252 days away, and it's one of the biggest changes in the pyramid, and a kingdom literally means a political system or structure, I think. I don't think it has to do with beings coming down from outer space. I think it has to do with a change in consciousness, of a will for the people to be free, of literally a drastic change in how they view their own responsibility, their own sovereign citizenship, and their own power as the creators of their reality. This is, I think, the new paradigm that is being unleashed because, I mean, we're lucky to be here. This is an interesting time, as the Chinese curse goes.
Yeah.
But, we are the greatest spiritual warriors of the entire age of mankind. And we are blessed to be in the interesting times to be able to fight for the future and fight the future in some ways, but fight for the future that we want and that we need. And I think it's irresponsible for some people to simply say that, you know, the United States is going to fall into the ocean when we have this magnificent destiny to be able to create the reality that we want.
All right, good enough. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Sean David Martin. Good morning.
Spiritual warriors, you gentlemen, you just gave me a lead-in. I want to thank you for being such wonderful spiritual warriors. This is the media in Salt Lake, listening on 570 AM.
Yes, ma'am.
Tantra is a lovemaking art form. There are two major teachers of that lovemaking art form whose names I can give if it's permissible. Otherwise, that's up to you.
Hey, who needs Viagra with Tantra?
Pardon me? Exactly. Stephen Gaskin on the farm in Tennessee, 60 miles south of Summertown, is a Zen Christian teacher who came out from the Haight-Ashbury, and he specializes in discussing, and taught me, as a matter of fact, I'm a student of his, Tantra. The other major teacher that I know of on the planet is a singer, a blues singer called Taj Mahal, and he's put together Blues Brothers 2000 to move us from Satanistic ways into the Pentecostal Black Christian, which is healing. I work with both gentlemen. Our chakras are changing, but I have had an experience that makes me think we've had the teaching wrong from the Babylonian times, and I would like to offer at your convenience what happened to me to make me think that our chakras are red sexual, orange solar plexus, cheerful golden heart, emerald throat, and there is a chakra undiscovered yet through which we telepath, which is the diamond sapphire tip top of the spine. We don't have a chakra at the base, discovered.
The Tibetans talk a lot about how we're going from a three chakra system, which is reproductive, digestive, and communicative, to a seven chakra system, which we have now, to a 12 chakra system, that humanity is actually evolving, that we've got currently 46 base pairs per turn in the DNA, but there are two base pairs per turn that are dormant, which will take us from 46 to 48, which is then 12, 12, 12, 12, which has a lot to do with the ascension and the ascension of humanity going from a seven chakra system to a 12 chakra system, where there would be two more energy centers or system at the and I guess what you would call the prostate ovarian, and then another chakra directly above the head, which is sort of like a halo, and then two more chakras or energy plumes coming out of the back, which are basically make you look angelic, and that is quite possible that the paintings of angels in the ancient times could in fact be just very spiritually evolved human beings, or maybe people from the future, that are actually functioning on all 12 cylinders, and of course, Tantra has a lot to do with that. The Tibetans also focus on something called tantric meditation, which is never really talked of in the West, because obviously Tantra is more sexy and more commercial. But tantric meditation has to do with focusing on the third eye and the and empowering the crown chakras and balancing out the base chakras with the tantric meditations as well.
All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Martin. Hi. Hello there.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
My name's Tim. I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
A question for Sean. What does he think about the Edgar Cayce, the rest of the predictions Edward Cayce made for the beginning of 98 through 99?
Well, very specifically, let me state two things here with all respect to Mr. Cayce. I think that the physical timelines have changed on the one hand. I think that humanity has managed to create a much different holographic reality where the Edgar Cayce timeline was in place, up to about 72. But I literally think that the timelines that we're living on changed in 93 and changed again in 95 through prayer, meditation, and intelligent action. And I think Cayce would be the first to agree that he's constantly talking about mind being the builder. If you read the rest of Edgar Cayce as well, and for those people that get the Delphi Associates newsletter, I actually had a number of quotes in the newsletter from Cayce, where Cayce said that the majority of his prophecies and predictions did not happen until well after the year 2000. And there's four different exact quotes that I took from various Edgar Cayce material that show that the period he's talking about, the formative period, is from 1958 to 1998, but the majority of his predictions, major Earth changes predictions, do not happen until about 2004, 2005, which relates much more with what I see happening with the collapse of material civilization sometime around, starting in 2004, and then leading up to 2012, 2020 or so.
It's interesting. I talked to Edgar Cayce's son.
Charles?
I interviewed him, yes, and he indicated that probably the least accurate of his father's predictions were those of Earth changes.
Yes, he's absolutely right. He was more accurate as far as his medical analysis.
Correct.
I could say he was about 90% up till 72, and he began to drop to about 25% or so. But
see, that may be because a timeline is changing.
That's exactly what I just said.
Yep.
Exactly. That
different way, but basically that a consciousness that's forming is beginning to modify things.
Well, probably the best explanation was Poseir Gwellus with the harmonic convergence and a lot of the Mayan prophecies. He felt, and he put this out to the rest of the world, that if they could get 144,000 people to greet the dawn on August 17th, 18th, and 19th of those 3 days, that all the various predictions would be pulled down by a factor of 10. I believe that you are going to see the pattern of what Edgar Cayce talked about. In other words, when Mount Pelée erupts, when Etna erupts, when Vesuvius erupts, when you have these various volcanoes erupt, that there were going to be Earth changes on the western part of the United States. I think you're going to see the pattern, but I do not think that you are going to see them in the magnitude which Cayce originally predicted.
I certainly hope you're correct. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
My name's Anna, and I'm calling from the West Coast. In fact, I live right next to the ocean in Northern California.
Oh, hi, Anna. Yeah, that's where I'm from, is Northern California, from Atherton.
I live in Fort Bragg.
Oh, nice place.
Yeah, and you can see the ocean from my house. But
nice.
The reason I'm calling is I do have a question, but I've heard the various people on Art Show with their prophecies, and I think, I've never been one of the people that gave any credence to what I call the doomist. I mean, except that I've had these dreams all my life. And they were personal to me, and I never really connected them to other things until I started hearing other people saying them. And
then it began to sound like they were talking about your personal dream.
Right, right. And some of them were things like, Manhattan Island with the high tide washing around the buildings, things like that. I mean, but there are just specific dreams throughout the years, but I had one that was very specific over 20 years ago that I hesitate to talk about it because it is so personal. I mean, I was shown the power of my own death and told to build my life on it. It was a specific instruction there, but it had to do with a specific symbol. I think it's called the cosmic remnosate, like an eternity symbol on its side. It had to do with volcanoes after nuclear bombs. It had to do with Henry Kissinger starting a chain of events way back in time.
Well, that's already happened, yeah.
Well, but at the time, I never figured where he fit in at all. And
well,
in a dream, I spoke to him.
Does your dream have to do specifically with, the prophecy or something you think's going to happen?
I don't know. See, it's...
All right, listen,
I wasn't given like a time or anything.
All right, listen, both of you, I'm going to have to ask you to hold on. We are at the bottom of the hour, and there has been so much information in this program. So much that if you missed it and you want a tape, you can get one now. It's obviously going to be a 4-hour length program, and it is available 24 hours a day. Beginning right now by calling 1-800-917-8255.
1-888-346-4278. Once again, a copy of this program by calling 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back. Okay, back now to Sean David Morton. Welcome back, Sean.
Oh, thank you.
It is the stretch run. And then it's from here to Paris.
Okay, hey. Sacre bleu.
Yes, indeed. First time caller line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I have a question about technology that comes out of Area 51.
All right, you're going to have to yell at us pretty loud. Where are you?
I'm in Laguna Niguel, California.
All right.
Right down the street.
Yep, far away.
Okay. A little while ago, about 3 months ago, I saw a show on Discover about non-lethal weapons.
Yes.
And some of the stuff they were using was like invisible ghillie suits for snipers in their trucks.
Yeah, they were fiber optics. I actually saw the show. They're like fiber optic meshes. So what they do is they take a picture of what's behind the object. It's called daytime stealth. It was also featured 2 months ago in Popular Science, where there's a mesh that actually, like, for example, if a plane's flying, it'll have a fiber optic mesh that'll take a picture of the sky above it and then project that picture on the underbelly of a craft or of a tank or whatever, so that unless you're looking right at it, you can't really see it.
So did that come out of Area 51? Or?
Probably. I mean, there's a lot of... it probably came out of... the big places you have this research going on is Lawrence Livermore Laboratories, you know, that the Russians used to call the Valley of Death, which is in Northern California. Places like Area 51, yes, they do highly advanced research like that. You know, but they do a lot of it right here in Southern California, TRW and Martin Marietta and Grumman and, not specifically really in Area 51 technology. Area 51 stuff is usually a little bit actually higher tech than that stuff.
Mm. Really? I thought night vision came out of there, too.
No, night vision came out of Bell Laboratories primarily. And if you read Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, he claims that... Yeah. They took a lens that these aliens actually, that when the ship crashed at Roswell, they actually had an eyeglass, a lens that you could look through that you could actually see would turn night into day. And that was then given to Bell Laboratories, and they then developed the night vision stuff.
It is remarkable. All right, caller, thank you very much. And take care. What do you think's happening at Area 51 now? Same old, or what?
Most of the shuttle programs got moved up to Utah, to the Area 6313, I think is what it's called now. NASA's obviously being privatized because even the junk technology, the civilian NASA level of technology, is getting too advanced to be released to the general public. So, of course, NASA's going private so that they can hide more stuff under the aegis and the umbrella of private corporations rather than government functionaries. Apparently, the Papoose Lake facility might still be there. There was just a man that was featured on the front page of the LA Times just recently. A gentleman by the name of Jerry Freeman, who actually hiked in through Antelope Valley and actually went in through the back of Area 51 and got close enough to Papoose Lake to take some photographs. He was actually a school teacher and anthropologist who was actually following a lost wagon train trail where a whole bunch of people died. These settlers died at Papoose Lake. And he says that there were doors that were opening with a bright light that were actually still coming out of the mountain. Didn't see any flying saucers, but that there was mysterious rumblings underground.
Oh, yes.
But we said, you know, we had not had a sighting. When I started going out there in February of 91 and actually saw a flying saucer for the first time, and it almost bounced off our car. We didn't really have a decent sighting up until, I think, after the spring of 93. There was really nothing there, and we had heard that the majority of the saucer program had been moved to out to Tucson, and supposedly they had the extraterrestrials actually there that they were interviewing, according to our friend, the mysterious Victor, from 89, actually 88 until about 91 or so. So
glad you mentioned Victor.
I'm trying to get him back on the show, I promise. When they actually release this thing... you know, the alien interview at Area 51, they release it nationally in August. I've been begging Tom Coleman to try to get him to come back on, and so I'm still pulling.
All right. I just wanted to prod you a little bit. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Indeed. You're going to be missed for the next couple of weeks, but we wish you a good trip to France.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Sean, I just want to make a quick comment and then kind of use your...
Hello.
Indeed, you're going to be missed for the next couple of weeks, but we wish you a good trip to France.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Sean, I just want to make a quick comment and then kind of use your prophetic skills on a question.
Okay.
I just thought it was interesting, you and the last caller, on your discussion, because there is technology where an object can take diodes, take the image from behind and put it in front.
Yeah, the fiber optic meshes that, it's been all over the Discovery Channel. It's not even classified anymore, so.
Sure.
Yeah, I thought that's interesting. But anyway, what I wanted to ask you is, they recently had a team of 120 scientists that measured the mass of neutrinos.
Mm-hmm.
And they were at the Advanced Studies Institute at Princeton University.
Right.
And they speculated that since there is mass, and they can prove it now through photoelectric cells and color change, in that 5 mile deep water that they had, that they were trapping the neutrinos in, mm-hmm. that whenever they did have coronal mass ejections, they noticed there was more activity.
Okay.
And they speculated that maybe it could affect the inner core of the Earth and the magma. And I just wondered if you had any prophetic insight into that, since that's kind of real late news.
Well, it's, obviously the moon affects the tides, so I don't see why the sun shouldn't affect the liquid magma inside the Earth. And of course, I mean, the reason we have volcanic activity is because one side of the Earth is actually hotter than the other side of the Earth, and it's a way for the Earth to release energy and cool it down. We are going to have a lot of increased volcanic activity running all the way from, the Mammoth Caldera in Whitney all the way up to Mount Baker through Mount St. Helens and through Mount Rainier, although I don't see an eruption of Mount Rainier anytime very soon. A lot of that energy is actually moved out into the ocean. It's an increase in volcanic activity, which is good. As long as the volcanoes are rumbling and things are coming up out of the volcanoes, it means that it's not going to that energy is not going to expel itself in the form of massive earthquakes. And I know a lot of people are saying that, if we have these volcanoes, then that means the next thing is we're going to have these gigantic earthquakes and California's going to slip off into the ocean, and it's just not going to happen. I mean, in my projections and my meditations of traveling about 100 years or so into the future and then looking back on what's happened here, it doesn't happen. I mean, I see the fracturing quake that takes out that begins to divide California doesn't happen until around 2010. And that there is that the New Madrid Fault begins to go, the rumblings of the New Madrid Fault happen around 2005, and the New Madrid Fault actually fractures open somewhere around 2 to 5 years after that, 2012 to 2015.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello.
Yes, good morning. This is Mark calling from Montreal.
Hi, Mark. Yes. Hey, how you doing in Montreal?
I'm listening to you on CIQC AM 600.
Thank you.
Sir, I'd like to know what you think your comments are on what's happening with the volcanic activity in Mexico, more particularly with Mount Popo.
Okay. One of the major predictions in the Delphi newsletter, which I hope everybody subscribes to, was the two things which were the eruption of Mount Surratt and the eruption of Mount Popocatépetl. What's happening is that Coco's Plate, which is a triangular plate that runs underneath Mexico City, is actually twisting. And as this platelet twists, you get the eruptions of Mount Popo. Now 500 years ago, when Popocatépetl erupted before, it was basically the beginning of what they called the fifth sun, or the dragon age. It is precursing some major events in Mexico. One of the places that I see actually being probably maintaining the most destruction of anywhere on the planet is going to be Mexico City. You've got basically a city of 27 million people that's built on a swamp that has basically no geological stability whatsoever, with no building codes, people living, almost in cardboard boxes that have been plastered over. Mm-hmm. And with the massive UFO activity that's been happening over Mexico City, one of the things that I've noticed in the pattern of UFO activity is that you will have massive UFO waves primarily before there is some kind of major or massive destruction. And it just seems to be a pattern that a few years before these things happen, we'll get a wave of this activity that will happen over an area. And I've said from the beginning, since I predicted the eruption of Mount Popo as being the beginning, the next thing that was going to occur in this 500-year cycle, that the earthquakes in Mexico City were going to kill
hundreds of thousands when they began to occur around the year 2000. It's not a good scenario for Mexico. I see all of Mexico on fire. I see, the volcanic eruption of Mount Popo in a major way. I see the twisting of Coco's Plate that then triggers tremors all the way up the Juan de Fuca Plate, all the way up to San Andreas, because the San Andreas runs up the Gulf of California, and into the Salton Sea up into California. So it's going to be a series of tremors up in California as well. It's the trigger. Mount Popo is the trigger. It occurs in a major way every 500 years or so. It was part of the Mayan prophecies as well, that with the total solar eclipse beginning in 1991 over Mexico City, that was the end of the 500-year age of darkness and pain. The beginning in 1991 was the beginning of Earth changes in earnest and the return of the masters of the stars, which, of course, is the UFO phenomenon that's begun to sweep the planet from 1991 on. Beginning a 500-year age, a 500-year age of cosmic consciousness and mass enlightenment.
Okay.
What the Great Pyramid calls the Messianic Age, actually.
My following question on that is, do you think it's going to cause major climate changes, i.e. with the weather, and will it influence Canada?
He's asking about specifically about Quebec, actually.
Well, I've been saying, my prediction was I thought Quebec would have seceded from the Union by now, and I think politically what's going to happen is that I don't think they'll be able to stop Quebec from seceding politically, and once Quebec secedes politically, then I think the western provinces of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and British Columbia are going to begin to secede as well, because they're going to keep their natural resources to themselves, and as I said, I've seen western Canada actually joining the what's eventually called the North American Union and becoming part of a section of 13 independent nation states that also has what's left of Mexico included in that.
How would you feel about that in Quebec if that would occur?
Let's just say we hope it won't happen. At least a lot of us hope it won't happen. We like the country the way it is. We've got a really great country here, and most of us just don't realize how good we actually have it. You don't have a lot of the problems that you have down in the States. Our crime rate isn't as high. If we had half of the murders that you have in New York, it would be like on every major newspaper and throughout the media.
For a while. But after a while, you'd become hardened to it, as we have.
But one thing I do have to comment on is the violence that we're seeing. It's like not only, it's like in the States you're seeing it with guns. Here we do it with clubs. It's like just not as sophisticated. We've got all these gun control laws, but they're not doing anything.
So in other words,
like,
you guys are forced
out of the hands of the people that want to go legitimately shooting.
So you folks are forced to club each other to death.
Yeah. It's like, you look at what happened to teenagers in D.C. They beat that poor girl to death.
I know.
And that's just one example. In Montreal, you've got the stabbings with the gangs. It's like you have it on a regular basis where some kid is getting stabbed.
Well, what does that say to you about your gun control laws?
I think they don't work. And it's like now they're trying to make them even stricter, and it's absolutely ludicrous.
All right, sir. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Go back way out east, west of the Rockies. You're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Good evening, Sean. All right, wonderful program.
Oh, you're going to have to kind of yell a little at us. You're not
it's
too sure.
I'm KSFO, and that is my name's Ann, and I wanted to ask a couple of questions of Sean.
Sure.
We're running out of time, though.
Keep coming back to energy, and I think this crime thing is like an energy field. Some energy is better in some places than in others. And I think we're talking about hoping for a new age, and we're looking for some gateway to a higher dimension called the Aquarian Age or whatever. And I noticed today an article which was showing the planet Cetus in the summer sky, and it's to the east, and it resembles a pharaoh sitting on a tablet. And it had me investigating a book about the Orion mystery. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Yes.
And in it, it says, so much of the Great Pyramid, the function of the Queen's Chamber remains a mystery. I know you and Art know a lot about that.
Well, the Queen's Chamber has to do with the material path. There's three paths in the
game. Exactly. Dense materialism versus higher octave.
Okay, I hate to push it here, but we're about out of time.
Question,
here.
Could it be that there were huge crystals or diamonds at one time in these pyramids, which created an energy vortex, and they were all connected with Sidonia and all the other pyramids, and the crystals, or we can call them diamonds, are now gone?
Yeah, well, I think that the pyramids themselves were actually created along a grid pattern, a and that the grid pattern was specifically designed to stabilize the tectonic platelets of the Earth. I also think that the Great Pyramid of Giza, that there has been a pyramid there for not just since the Fourth Dynasty, but that the pyramid is constantly rebuilt in that location because it's at the exact center of the landmass, and it's vital and essential to actually stabilize the tectonic plates. That's why we have baffles of pyramids all across China, all across Mexico, all across the world. And as I said, the pyramid represents seven prophetic days of prophecy or 7,000 years, and it also represents three paths of enlightenment, the path that leads down to the pit, which is, of course, the road to hell, if you will, the Queen's Chamber, which is the path of materialism, of those who have to constantly reincarnate over and over and over again because they have to learn by putting their hand on the stove to seeing that it's hot, and the King's Chamber path, which then leads up to eventual ascension and the conquest of death. And I think a very large chunk of humanity, primarily those who listen to Art Bell's radio show, are going to be the ones going up to the King's Chamber and actually ascending, because we're creating three realities on the planet right now. We're creating hell on Earth at the exact same time we're creating heaven on Earth. You do not live in the same reality, if you will, living here in the United States, which I think prophetically is the kingdom of heaven, which I think prophetically has a great destiny as a sovereign nation and a sovereign citizen to fulfill what the Bible talked about as being the second great kingdom that was that had at its borders to the east and the west shining seas, to the south a great river, which is the Rio Grande, and to the north is the top of the world, which is the United States and Canada. We're living in the most exciting time ever, that with technology coming together, with spirit, with the influences of the Aquarian Age, with communication coming together, there is a very small core of dark lords that sort of sit upon all of this, that they are powerful because they are few, but because they have their hands on the choke points of power, energy, and information, that we are powerful because we are many. We are learning to communicate through alternate forms of media, through things like my newsletter, the Delphi Associates.
All right, I want to give you a chance to plug it, so go ahead and plug your newsletter, because we are out of time.
All right, one last time. For those of you that want to subscribe to the newsletter, the Delphi Associates, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow, it's $50 donation. Please send it to PRI. That's at 2207 Hermosa Avenue. That's 2207 Hermosa. And we are in Hermosa Beach, California at 90254. And if you want to call tomorrow, we have an 800 number. The 800 number is 800-723-6962.
All right, Sean. Thank you.
Arthur,
what a dynamic program.
You have a great time. I hope everybody orders the tape, and I hope you guys play this over and over. And my friend, have a great time. Tell Ramona hello from me.
I will.
And drink some wine and eat some bread and ride a bicycle and just have a great time in France.
That's what we'll be doing. Take care.
Okay.
Good night, Sean. That's Sean David Morton, everybody. What a program, huh? If you want a copy of this program, and I can understand why you would, the number to call now, 24 hours a day, or whenever you can manage to get through, is 1-800-917-4278. Again, that's 1-800-917-4278. Don't forget the website. I will be trying to send some pictures on almost a daily basis from Paris, if I can do it. I will try, all right? The Adventures of the Bells in Paris. So we'll try and send a little souvenir back every time we get the opportunity, if we can get online. And I'm going to miss you all. I'm really going to miss you all. I hope I can handle it. Anyway, for now, that's it. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.